Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call to order the Suzanne County Board of Supervisors' regular meeting on June the 15th, 2022, at 7 p.m. Would you please stand and learn to say pledge of allegiance, and then we'll have a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, this afternoon, I am sitting in for Mr. Sheridan, the chair. He's away on a very deserving time with his family. And with the vice chair, Mr. Tony O'Brien, and our condolences have gone out to him. If he appears, he's here.
He's on there right now.
All right, he will have to officially give the gavel or give me the authority to carry on the meeting. If not, he will have to do it from his phone.
So, Mr. O'Brien, if you could come off mute by chance, since you're the preceding vice chair. Since you're the...
Yes, I'm off mute here.
Yep.
I will pass the gavel on to Mrs. Booker.
Okay, thank you. And be careful, Mr. O'Brien, on your way.
I will. Thank you for taking care of this for me.
Okay, so the first thing on our agenda is adoption of the agenda. Do you have anything to add, to delete? So, members?
No.
Okay. I need an adoption for the agenda.
I move that we adopt the agenda.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded we adopt the agenda. Next thing is our county administrator's report.
And this is Madam Chair and members of the board, just let the record stand that Mr. Tony O'Brien is attending the meeting virtually today. So just a few things for the county administrator's report, not too much, and then we'll get into other business. So the Fluvanna Library is in full swing. They've got summer reading going on. They've had three large programs, including many workshops and drop-in events, including Tech Day, Star Wars Day, Kite Day, and more. They had a mini petting zoo, which had 250 people that attended here. And if you look at the picture there to the right, they had some good time with farm animals, all the kids did. And then also under the sea, they had live animals in the library. They had 325 people attend that. And then Tailwise Pirates at Sea, they had 82. All the programs are sponsored by Friends of the Library, and like usual, Ms. Hoffman does a fantastic job providing programs and events for kids in the community and adults too. And just one reminder, so the VACO, Virginia Association of Counties meeting for Regions 5 and 7, Fluvanna County is hosting the meeting for this event. It's going to be July 12th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Cunningham Creek Winery. And just as a reminder, Region 5 includes Albemarle, Buckingham, Cumberland, Fluvanna, Goochland, Nelson, and Powhatan. And Region 7 includes Caroline, Culpeper, Fauquier, King George, Louisa, Orange, Rappahannock, Spotsylvania, and Stafford. So a good chance to hear kind of legislative updates. Other elected officials will be attending as well. So hope all the boards attend that event.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
So I was thinking about this with VACO, and of course we come to the state meetings and so on also. So when there is more than two board members attending an event that is a intended government event, is that like can we have three of us and participate in conversations, and
as long as you're not transacting public business?
Okay.
So if you're going, for example, to a talk on recent developments in the law, government supervisors, something like that, you can be there. You can be participating in the discussion and ask questions and things like that, but you're not transacting public business.
Yeah, if the five of you were all kind of huddled in there talking about, you know, potential upcoming, you know, county business or something that, then that would kind of, you know, signify a public meeting. Whereas if you're just there, but maybe not all kind of huddled together and spread out and attending a meeting, but it's, you know, there's no decisions being made or official county business, that would be okay.
Okay. The other thing is, it is not unlawful to have three members, but if you do and transact business, then that makes it a meeting, and you have to follow all the rules about meetings, including keeping minutes, following the procedures, things like that.
And, you know, we shouldn't even be near three. We shouldn't even be near each other, should we? We should not be. Three, if three of us are standing talking to other supervisors, three of us should never be in the same vicinity. Is that true?
No, that's not really true. That's a very conservative reading of the statute, and you would not be wrong if you did that.
Okay.
But I don't think that's necessary. If you had, you know, let's say you had a VACO meeting and you were there swapping ideas about, you know, well, our redistricting had so-and-so problems. And, the guy from Bland County says, well, we didn't have any because we only have one district. You know, things like that.
Okay.
That is not the transaction business, so that would be okay. Also, you can do it if it's for things that are otherwise exempt. So, for example, if you went to a funeral, and there were three of you there, or five of you there for that matter, you're not there to do county business. You're there for to honor the deceased.
The conservative approach is if there's only two of you there, then you can pretty much be guaranteed that you're not having an official county meeting.
Yeah.
So
then you don't have to make a difference.
Yeah.
It's done.
But of course, VACO in itself, if you're going to have the state meeting, would be a complete perversion of everything that conservative perspective.
Not really, because you're not transacting Fluvanna County business.
Yeah.
It's more on the region and the state and stuff, and in hearing what's happening in the state.
And it's educational.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more like education.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
And that's all that I have to report for the board today.
Wow.
Yep, just two slides.
Really, I was settling in for the long
run. No, I'm keeping it short today. Yeah. And just a reminder, some upcoming meetings, July 6th. We only have one meeting in July. It's a 5 p.m. regular meeting, and then we have the 7 p.m. meeting there if we have to have any public hearings. And that's going to be here at the library. And then back in August, starting August 3rd, at 5 p.m., we'll have a regular meeting in the Performing Arts Center. And then on August 17th, it says 5 p.m., that should say 7 p.m. But there's a regular meeting, and that's to be at the Performing Arts Center.
Okay.
That's all I have.
All right. Thank you. Right now, we are going to open for our first public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Just a moment, sir.
Okay.
Please remember to keep your comments 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. But let me say, we have a public hearing coming up. If you want to speak to the public hearing, come up when we get to the public hearing. This is just regular comments. Okay?
Yes.
All right.
Hi, my name's Hal Morgan. I live in 2 Shorewood Circle at Lake Monticello. I serve as one of Fluvanna County's joint representatives. I was recently elected to a second term as joint vice president. I also serve on joint's operations safety committee and represent joint as its rural representative to the regional transit partnership. And one of the reasons I'm here this evening is to support my colleague Lucinda Shannon of the Thomas Jefferson Regional Plan District Commission, who's going to give an overview of areas regional transit vision plan as this year wind ever into this final stages. But the real reason I'm here tonight is the reaction to an article in the July 2-8 issue of the Plano Review entitled Group Asks County to Join AARP Network for Seniors. Marty Keene, CEO of the Jefferson Area Planning Board for Aging, who also serves as the president of the Charlottesville Area Alliance made a presentation to you at a May 4th meeting asking for you to approve Covanta County join the AARP network of livable communities. Covanta County is one of the 30 entities that are members of the Charlottesville Area Alliance. I am a Covanta County's representative on the CAA. Mrs. Keene was asking you to take the next step and join this AARP network of livable communities because it offers more resources for Covanta to be connected with other rural areas and their best practices. That is to look beyond Charlottesville. I understood from Mrs. Keene and the Covanta Review article that some of you had issues approving this request, tabling the discussion into your retreat in August. There are no fees to join the AARP network of livable communities, just as there are no fees for Covanta County's membership in the community in the Charlottesville Area Alliance. Well, I personally think there's no downside to our county becoming a member of this AARP network. I'm here this evening to offer myself as a resource to you in answering any questions or concerns you have prior to your August meeting so that you'll have all the information you need to make an informed and hopefully favorable decision on Ms. Keene's request. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to address the board?
Good evening. Hi, my name is Diane Kerr. I'm a Covanta County resident. I live at 1 Laguna Road, Palmyra. The purpose for my comments tonight connects to this evening's presentation by Lucinda Shannon regarding the Regional Transit Vision Plan. I'm a recent graduate of the Covanta Leadership Development Program, FLDP. As you may know, FLDP participants engage in a collaborative project that addresses a need in Covanta County. My team members and I worked on a project that was to identify transit needs in our county and propose a solution. Our findings were not surprising. In short, they applauded the services that JOC provides, although limited, while acknowledging that many residents, especially those who are resource limited, do not have adequate transportation options. More options exist for seniors, but even those do not meet the needs of that demographic. Our research shows the need is real. Our proposal is to create a regional transportation collaborative similar to the one that has been created and serves Culpeper, Orange, Fauquier, Madison, and Rappahannock counties. One outcome would be to have a system where residents can make just one phone call to satisfy their transportation needs, an on-demand system. A one-stop shop, if you will. In our view, the only way to leverage the resources of our rural area of Virginia is to join forces and work together. My understanding is that the regional transit plan has greater objectives than our small project did, but it incorporates the overall finding of our project. The rural areas need special consideration and a focused plan. I'd like to quote from the Regional Transit Vision Plan for the Charlottesville area. Quote, in areas of the region with lighter concentrations of residents and jobs or longer distances between concentrations, solutions other than frequent fixed route services, like John, may be needed. Examples may include on-demand services with shorter reservation lead times needed in concentrated activity zones. It goes on to talk about partnerships with other parties, including the Commonwealth of Virginia. Chairman and the Board of Supervisors, I, along with my FLDP team members, urge the board to consider and support the work presented tonight. This partnership will only enhance our community and the needs of all of our residents. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else who would like to address the board? Seeing none, I will close.
Yes. I was just saying, just in case, if there's online, Ms. Harris, do you see
anyone
online?
Anyone
just
online?
No one's coming off of mute or raising their hands.
Okay, yep. So I will close the first public comment section, and we will go to public hearing. First public hearing is SUP 2202, Louisa County, Douglas Smiles, Community Development Director.
Yes, good evening, board members. We also have Andy Wade with Louisa County, the applicant, is here tonight to present after I do.
Okay,
So this SUP 2202 Louisa County is a special use permit to allow for major utilities with respect to Louisa County constructing their new public water and sewer lines from Ferncliff to Shannon Hill. And those lines will be constructed within the limits of the U.S. Route 250 right-of-way. Subject properties are numerous. The requests are known as tax maps 2432, 242184, 1A4, 24A11A, 24A11, 24A15B, 24AGL15, and 24A16. And they're zoned A1, general agricultural, and they're generally located along U.S. Route 250 and near its intersection, at its intersection with Three Trout Road in the rural preservation area and within the Columbia Election District. So it's located in the upper northeast corner of the county, right where Louisa, Flavanna, and Beechman all come together. This is a aerial shot showing all the parcels up and down 250, basically as they leave Flavanna and go into Goochland. This is Timmons Group's depiction of the area of the route that the water and sewer lines would be installed up and down 250. And working with Louisa County, we came up with two recommended conditions in conjunction with them through the TRC meeting, working with VDOT, our ENS plans reviewer, building official, and so on. The construction and operation and maintenance of Louisa County's water and sewer lines would be located in Flavanna County shall comply with all local, state, and federal requirements. Second and most important one for both parties is vehicular access to all of the residences and parcels along the Route 250 right-of-way shall be maintained at all times, and Louisa County shall be responsible for returning all affected access points or mailboxes to equal or better conditions upon project completion. And as part of this request, we've been working with them, with Louisa County and their partner, Timmons Group, on this for quite some time, and they have done their due diligence in working with all the property owners along 250 and obtaining necessary right-of-way and other written documents to do that. So we feel confident they're going to do meet these two conditions. From this, also from this request, we have to add the information that you all as the board would be able to find the new proposed Louisa County public water and sewer lines to be in substantial accordance with our 2015 comprehensive plan, because under Virginia's state code section 15.220.232 revolves around the legal status of the plan, that these proposed public lines would be for the public good in this area of Flavanna County. And from the actual chapter, infrastructure, chapter 3, that statement clarifies it and provides information to Louisa to know that what they're doing is in compliance with our Flavanna County plan. At this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Wade.
Thank you, Douglas. Madam Chair, members of the board, good evening. Andy Wade, Economic Development Director for Louisa County, project manager for this project. Joined online, I think Bruce Strickland is online. He'll be able to answer any technical questions as we get further along in the presentation. Make this pretty quick. So the project need is a water and sewer service to our Shannon Hill growth area, which is exit 148 on I-64 to the east of Ferncliff. There we have a growth area. We also have recently, within the past 3 years, purchased 700 acres and are in the process of developing that for a regional business park, Shannon Hill Route 605. So the water and sewer lines that will be owned by Louisa County and operated by the Louisa County Water Authority. Current infrastructure will tie in to our existing infrastructure at Ferncliff, which is exit 143 to the west of Shannon Hill. There we have a newly constructed water treatment plant and additional wastewater infrastructure in place that we will tie into. As approximately 34,000 linear feet of water line that extends from Fern Cliff to Shannon Hill, approximately 37,000 linear feet of sewer line. 16-inch water line, 12-inch sewer line. That'll be a force main sewer line. Won't be gravity. And roughly that distance, about 3,800 linear feet, is located within Fluvanna County. Seven parcels total that we cross in front of in Fluvanna County within the right-of-way, the 250 right-of-way. There are two parcels that we need temporary construction easements from. That's Ms. Marion Payne and Randall Reeves. And that is essentially to do the horizontal bore, the drill under 250. That's where we cross from the south side of 250 over to the north side of 250. And again, that will be temporary construction easements, and those will be vacated once the project is completed. We, as Douglas mentioned, we have reached out to all the property owners along the line, not only in Fluvanna, but also in Goochland and in Louisa as well. In the TRC meeting, we discussed fire hydrant spacing, and your fire personnel agreed that 500 feet was an adequate spacing for your needs. So within the Fluvanna area of this pipeline, we'll have, I don't know how many fire hydrants that'll be, but they'll be 500 feet apart. And we agreed not to put them down in the ditch, so they don't have to crawl down there and hook hoses to them, so they'll be as close to the road as possible for adequate access. We have no prohibition on connecting customers or residents that live in Fluvanna County, and we'll just be subject to capacity availability and normal Louisiana County Water Authority policies. Next slide, please. Is that me or you?
That's me. Okay. Yeah.
And this is just an aerial overview of the project as a whole. As you can see, it starts in Zion Crossroads with existing infrastructure, and then comes to the middle in the reddish pink area, and that's Ferncliff growth area. The green triangle is existing pump station. The blue square is existing water treatment plant, and the bold black line is the direction or the alignment of the water and sewer pipe as it goes from Ferncliff to Chantel. And that, again, that's within the VDOT right away. And then it goes down through Goochland, goes under 64, back up north on 605 to the Shenandoah growth area. And the yellow hashed area there is our regional business park. Next slide, please. And this just give you a cross-section view. So the vertical lines on the left and right, the very furthest out, are the edge of the right-of-way is on 250. It's about 150 feet wide there, I believe. It's really wide, so you can see we're well within the VDOT right-of-way there. And again, with the exception of those two temporary construction easements, there is no requirement of us to acquire permanent easements from any residents within Fluvanna County. And Bruce, if you'd like to add any engineering language, that'd be great at this time.
Sure. Thanks, Andy, and Madam Chair, members of the board. Good evening, and thanks for allowing us to present tonight. Andy, I think you pretty much covered it. The only thing I would add is that a majority of these pipelines will be installed in a typical shallow utility trench, about 3.5 feet deep. Other areas, if we encounter any environmentally sensitive areas like wetlands or stream crossings, we're going to avoid impacts to those altogether by implementing horizontal directional drilling and going underneath of those areas instead of creating new impacts. Other than that, I think you got it covered.
Very good. Well, that concludes our remarks. Happy to field any questions you may have.
Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for Mr. Wade or Mr. Strickland?
I don't.
Okay, thank you.
Perfect, thank
the
you.
The only question I have, Mrs. Booker?
Yes.
Mrs. Booker?
Yes.
Yes, I do have one question.
All right.
I apologize if it's answered. In fact, I don't have access to it right now. But are the fire hydrants being put in place by Fluvanna County or by Louisa County?
Madam Chairman, I'm not sure who this is.
That's Mr. O'Brien.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's Mr. O'Brien.
I didn't recognize him.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mr. O'Brien.
Yes. That my question is, are the fire hydrants being put in By Fluvanna County or Louisa County?
No, Louisa County. Louisa County will install the fire hydrants.
Okay, awesome. Well, okay. You answered my two questions with regard to availability of utilities and the fire hydrants. Those were the two things that I felt were important.
Yeah, so that good point. So just to clarify, the sewer is a force main, so typically anytime you tie into a force main, it requires the pressure on the other end to equalize the pressure going in. So if there was a residence that, or a resident that wanted to tie into that, that probably would require the need for a pump station of some sort in the event of a drain field failure or something of that nature. Anyway, I just wanted to make that note on the record.
Sure. Appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So, board members, any more questions? If not, I'm going to open the public hearing. Anyone here would like to speak to what you have just heard from Louisa County, please come to the podium and give your name and your address. Okay, I don't see anyone coming forward, so we will close the public hearing. And we're looking for the motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 2202 in Louisa County, a special use permit to allow for major utilities with respect to Louisa County constructing new public water and sewer lines from Ferncliff to Shannon Hill, which will be constructed within the limits of the U.S. Route 250 right-of-way. Subject properties of the request are known as tax maps 24-3-2, 24-2-1A4, 24-A-11A, 24-A-11, 24-A-15B, 24-A-GL15, and 24-A-16, along with the two conditions as found within the staff report.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second.
And we have a motion by Mrs. Speaker and a second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. All right. Chair votes aye with one person absent. Mr. Sheridan. Thank you.
And the record should show that Mr. O'Brien participated using the statutory right to be absent during for a family emergency, okay. And that he voted in favor of the motion.
Yes. All right. That's on record. Thank you. Our next public hearing is ZMP 2202 Johnston and Company LLC. Mr. Miles.
So, Madam Chair, if it's all right, we would like to have these as companion cases for all the right. Public hearing.
The second one, we could do both.
They can be heard together. You need to take action soon.
Okay. And the SUP 2201 Johnston and Company LLC. Okay.
All right. So ZMP 2202 Johnston and Company LLC. This is a conditional rezoning from A1 General Agricultural to the B1 General Business Zoning District on 6.4 plus or minus acres of tax map 17, section 2, parcel 2. The subject property is located 900 feet north of the Route 53 and Turkey Sag Trail intersection and is adjacent to the UVA Community Credit Union in the Ribana Community Planning Area and the Cunningham Election District. And the companion case, SUP 2201, Johnson & Company LLC. This is a special use permit request in the B1 General Business Zoning District to permit a contractor's storage yard with respect to 6.4 plus or minus acres of tax map 17, section 2, parcel 2. And in this request, the applicant is proposing to operate an electrical contracting business, and you would not have any outside contracting storage or have contractor equipment stored outside in the storage complex. In this request. And it's generally located on Route 53 and just north of the Turkey Sag Trail intersection. This is an aerial view. You can see the parcel outline just north of UVA Community Card Union. And again, this is the zoning aerial. You have B1 zoning, approximately 28 acres to the south. Behind is Lake Monticello, R4, and generally to the north, A1 and R3, and villages in A1. This is the applicant's proposed sketch plan that's for the self-storage facility and office and contractor storage yard. The applicant, Corey Johnson, is here tonight, along with his engineer, Justin Shemp, from Shemp Engineering, and they'll go over more of this in detail during their presentation. So from a planning perspective, the Urbana Community Planning Area is our growth area for the county, and it contains a mixture of residential and commercial uses, medium and small commercial uses, along with other office and residential uses, all combined to form a series of commercial shopping centers that are interconnected with the lake in a mixed-use development format. This proposed request is located in the neighborhood mixed-use area of the comp plan of this area. It is a mix of retail and office uses, which this request is. It is an office warehouse facility with storage. The applicant, as stated, proposes to run his electrical contracting office along with other potential office uses that is located in the B1 district and which complies with this plan, with our plan. So from the rezoning side, the proffered conditions, B1 prohibited land use recommendations for what they've proffered up. These are actually almost exactly the same of the rezoning you all did last year for Mr. Dusty Christian on Lake Monticello Road across from the Flavanna Self-Storage 2 facility. Automobile sales and repair, boarding houses, RV sales, fast food restaurants, large-scale retail stores, neighborhood convenience, retail stores, and indoor shooting ranges by right would not be permitted on the premises. Nor would they also be able to come back by the special use permit process at a later date in B1 and request adult entertainment uses, commercial amusements, dance halls, halfway houses, commercial kennels, manufactured home sales, outdoor entertainment, outdoor recreational facilities, adult retail stores, and transportation terminals. This is a change from the May 10th Planning Commission meeting. The applicant has proffered up proffered condition 2 for architectural detail, indicating that the front facade of any building fronting on State Route 53 must have a minimum of 2 material finishes, with each of the 2 minimum required finishes being applied to no less than 20% of the facade and 1 required material finish being brick or stone clad. I'm going to go over the SUP side of the request. These are the recommended conditions from planning staff and the planning commission, along with the condition 8 added at the end. The administrative site development plan shall be in substantial accordance with the plan you saw earlier and a few slides prior to that, with the Johnson & Company LLC self-storage rezoning and special use permit concept plan, as prepared by Shemp Engineering and last revised on May 23rd. 2022. And then prior to, these are some standard conditions we have in our SUP requests. Prior to the development of the site development plan that meets the requirements of the Flavanna County Zoning Ordinance shall be submitted for administrative approval. Any lighting that would be on the premises, most likely wall packs, shall not be directed toward the adjacent properties and shall comply with Article 25 Outdoor Lighting Control of the Flavanna County Zoning Ordinance. Any noise would comply with Chapter 15.1 of the Flavanna County Code, or any changes that, as you all recently heard from the Sheriff's Department, any changes that we make, they would be codified in Chapter 15.1 for the noise ordinance. The site shall be maintained in an even orderly manner so that the visual appearance from the public right-of-way, Route 53, and adjacent properties is acceptable county officials. The Board of Supervisors or its representative would reserve the right to inspect the property for compliance with these conditions at any time. then under section 22-17-4F, part 2, the Flavanna County Code, the Board of Supervisors does have the authority to revoke a special use permit if the property owner has substantially breached the conditions of the special use permit. We don't anticipate that being a concern. The last condition has been added since the May 10th Planning Commission meeting. No outside storage of heavy equipment for earthwork operations affiliated with a contractor's storage yard will be permitted. It does not preclude storage of heavy equipment for earthwork operations during their construction activities on the property. And at the May 10th Planning Commission meeting, there were some comments or questions about existing landscaping and additional areas around the request site. So staff went out last week, took some pictures. This is looking up Route 53. You're looking at the entrance. Right behind you to the right is UVA Credit Union. Now you're looking straight in from the other side of the road. Your subject property is on your left-hand side and UVA Credit Union is on the right. Looking straight in from Happy Tails into the Gate Plaza area, and you're looking at the rear buffer along Gate Plaza area adjacent to Sal's restaurant. Now we've turned and went down the Food Line area behind the Food Line property owned by Mr. Hill and Macon Partners. This is the retaining wall and the landscaping. And we have another slide that goes further down this area into the actual loading dock area where you see the retaining wall and the existing vegetation that's quite large in the rear of this property. And this is on the back side over on Fleetwood Drive, Fleetwood Road, and the back side of the request site, which is also highly wooded in the acre section. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Johnson and or Mr. Schumer.
You don't have any questions for Mr. Miles?
I have one question. You mentioned Dusty's building, Dusty
yes.
Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that building going to be made of, the exterior? Or is there is no designation, is there?
We did not do any designation of that. Actually, he's going to screen the building from the Lake Monticello Road 618 right away.
Okay.
So you will never see the building in the compound area. So he's owned that property for quite a while, and he already had his VDOT entrance permit from, I believe, the mid-90s when he purchased it. So at this point, he's in the process of completing a site plan approval, working with VDOT to get started probably this fall, I would think.
And Mr. Miles, was he berming some of the front of that? Or was
yes, there actually was a, that's kind of his business. You know, he does excavation, so he wanted to, he worked with Shemp Engineering on the project as well to berm that area and provide some landscaping. And also the other reason he's doing is because he's a resident of that area. He lives about three houses behind his new facility back on River Run Drive.
Yeah.
So he couldn't get any more involved in his own community and neighborhood there. So he's going to buffer it and screen it as best he can.
Thank you.
For his own.
All right, any more questions?
Before we carry on, if I can get a pause, I'm going to use the restroom real quick.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. We'll take a pause.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a recess. Yep. Take a 5-minute recess.
A 5-minute recess. You can get up and stretch and socialize.
Yeah. I'm not telling you about seconds, but about 10 minutes at least.
I'm He has a very short presentation, and he can tell you a little bit about his business and what he's trying to accomplish on the site. We'll be happy to answer any questions that come up. A couple slides. So, property question you saw in the staff presentation earlier is basically in between the Food Line and Neighbor Village. Neighbor Village probably pretty familiar with the location. I think it's next slide. And of course, is in the growth area, your largest growth area, which has the largest population center in the county. In particular, in this site, adjacent to pretty significant commercial, some of the most traffic intense or use intense commercial in that corridor, being the Food Line associated shopping center there. Next slide, please. The zoning map, I think, is interesting because it illustrates a point here about the property that's planned that really makes sense in this location. You see we're surrounded by a B1 zoning to the south, which is, again, that higher intense use. The R3, which is a residential use, and, of course, the R4 being the sort of most intense residential use in the county. It was noted, it was noted in the staff report, that this use really fits well, basically buffering between what is a intense commercial use and residential around it. I think you can think of the proffers on this essentially makes it like a B1 light, right? A lot of these uses that have large retail, even the neighborhood convenience, those high traffic generators, noisy people, trucks coming up at 4 a.m. to load, are not allowed for the proffers in this zoning. So we've essentially taken commercial and dialed it down a step. As you can sort of see, we're stepping from commercial residential, and that was brought up in the staff report. This really sort of use is a nice buffer between those residential areas and that commercial versus a more intense commercial in that location. Next, please. here's our site layout. And so this is, I don't know if you can zoom in on this a little bit, but basically the concept is to have an entrance off 53, which you saw from the photos earlier would be just up the street from the UVA Credit Union, which is the building directly there. And then we would have our office and some storage, and then those storage units working right at the back. There's a required 50-foot setback from the adjacent agricultural piece to the north of us. And there's also a required screening buffer. And there's actually screening required also along Route 53. It was brought up earlier about the Christian plan. You all have a pretty robust landscape ordinance for along the frontages of the road. So that certainly, I think, Mr. Christian, in his case, you know, knowing that his use, he is going to have heavy equipment stored there, which we are not, wanted to screen it more. Some of those things were already required by your code to begin with. The berming of landscape is actually one of the possible requirements. So we don't necessarily plan on building a large berm, but there will be some landscaping installed per your ordinance on the frontage. We have left off a little space. You'll see that the brown sort of two spaces at both the end, you'll see a little arc of that parking lot is. That's an area for stormwater management. Also, there's a kind of undeveloped space you'll see closer to the food line on the, I guess, in the south side, which is also undeveloped for stormwater purposes. I was not at the last meeting, but I understand there was some concern about that from adjoining properties, particularly the commercial properties. And it should be clear to everybody, so everyone's, you know, aware that the regulations have tightened quite a lot since those were built. So, for example, when the food line was built, they were permitted to release a certain amount of stormwater downstream. They were not required to do quality, neutral water quality offsets, which will be required to do. So, for those who are worried, and I know that's a concern, we're held to a higher standard than those folks downstream was were when they were developed. So that just gives some folks a peace of mind that we cannot go and create runoff that would have an adverse impact on their properties. The rules have become more extensive and required to survey as necessary and mitigate those things downstream. Next slide. Always here's my, you know, a little bit of zoom in. These are from the TRC comes with a couple things about buffers, a required turn radius for the fire truck, and then, of course, a 26-foot travel. I think it was also a fire. There's sort of minor technical details that we were alerted of that we'll be able to accommodate for the TRC. All right, next. This is the proposed trip generation for the site. As noted, this is a very light type of use. We're talking about in the AM, 8 trips in total, PM, 12 trips in total, 100 trips in a day. So for a 6-acre site, that is a very minimal amount of traffic that's commercial. That would be the equivalent of, you know, 10 residential houses. So it is not a significant impact in terms of traffic. Next slide, please. The proffers were presented as discussed, which basically I say I put us on a B1 light, a less intense type use. And then after the Planning Commission meeting, some of the concerns we heard, we added a proffer about requiring two materials, one of which being brick or stone. So the building will be required to have basically a brick or stone clad base to it, and then it could be a metal siding or other materials, but it will have a little more architectural detail of just a metal building for that proffer. Next. Okay. And that's the summary I had. I'll let Corey talk for a minute about what he's trying to accomplish in his business, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for coming out. As was already stated, I own an electrical business, been in Food Banner County personally roughly 18 years. I've been running that business for about 9 of those years. I currently rent from another self-storage in Food Banner County. That's where my office is, and storage for materials and things of that nature. That's what kind of led me in this direction to build my business, have my own sort of, you know, not all brick, but brick and mortar location. So I'm really hoping that you guys approve this today so I can achieve my dream. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for the applicant?
Where's your building now? Where is your office?
The Flavanna self-storage on 600.
Okay. Any other questions for the applicant?
I talked to him yesterday, so I've asked my questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so now open for the public Hearing anyone who would like to speak, please come to the podium, and you have a spare topic, and direct to the board, and you have 5 minutes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Cindra Curley. I'm one of the landowners and partners of Decay Plaza LLC, which is located at tax map parcel 1715X. We have processes for reasons. We have laws for a reason. Part of that reason is to be equitable. When we disregard processes or laws, we tend to be inequitable. That is what has happened with the matter before you. Consequently, the board cannot, in good faith, approve or defer this agenda items, these two agenda items. Therefore, it must either deny or remand the case back to the Planning Commission for further consideration of public comment. Firstly, the process by which this request has come before the board was not followed as per the application. Secondly, due to incomplete county records, the county failed to inform all adjacent property owners of the property proposed rezoning and special use permit request, and thereby infringed upon their legal right under code. Thirdly, the county failed to respond to a Freedom of Information Act request within the legally required 5-day period by state code, thereby infringing upon the applicant and the adjacent landowner's rights. The process by which this request has come before the board was not followed per the application. The application clearly states that applications received after the first working day will have the process start the following month. This application was received March 18th, which means that it should not have started the process until April. The first step in the process is that it be placed on the next available technical review committee agenda. This item was reviewed by the TRC prior to the application even being submitted. There was a pre-app meeting on January 13th, and then it was on the TRC meeting agenda February 10th. What makes this request special in that it gets to supersede process clearly outlined on the application. Additionally, said application says you can approve, deny, defer, or remand back to the commission the request, yet the agenda item staff report does not state that you can remand back. Secondly, due to incomplete county records, the county failed to inform all adjacent property owners of the proposed rezoning and special use permit request. Tax map parcel 1715X, owned by Gate Plaza LLC, and commonly known as Gate Plaza, a shopping center adjacent to Food Line, and the property in question for rezoning and special use permit, was not informed. The Gate Plaza property was purchased in May 2002 by one of the partners and later deeded to the LLC in August 2003. Said owners have received and paid real estate taxes on this property for the past 20 years, yet the property ownership was never updated in the county GIS system. 20 years. The county was able to hear our request for building, not only the first time in 2003, but with the addition and the additional buildings that came years later. The county was able to have their records up to date to send us annual real estate tax bills and reassessments as they arose. But the county's failure to update their GIS system regarding our property for 20 years results in us not being informed as adjacent landowners. So, on the Board of Supervisors staff report under neighborhood meetings, where it states in one sentence one, no comments provided by adjacent property owners regarding a virtual neighborhood meeting on March 24, 2022, we did not have an opportunity to respond as we were not informed of the meeting. I'd also like to point out that meeting was scheduled 4 business days after the application was received. No wonder they had no adjacent property owners comment. There wasn't time to receive the notification. Had we been informed of the meeting, we would have been present and commented. Regarding the Planning Commission meeting section of the staff report, once again, we had not been informed of the meeting as required. We did find out about it secondhand a couple of days before the meeting, at which point one of the partners contacted Douglas Miles and was told that we were not on the GIS and that was not his department's concern, that we needed to contact the Commissioner of the Revenue. So the partner chooses to attend the meeting for fear of not being heard and may continuing on without input from us as adjacent landowners. We did not have time to inform our tenants of the zoning and special use permit for them to consider any implications to their business and customers. Having limited and short-term knowledge of the rezoning and special use permit obviously leaves us concerned for the implications for our value of our property, the impact on our tenants, their businesses, customers, and hence the larger community, which leads us to the Freedom of Information Act request. On May 27th, a Freedom of Information Act request for all info related to the requested rezoning and special use permit was submitted to Fluvanna County. Per state code and the Fluvanna County website, Fluvanna County must respond to your request within 5 working days of receiving it. That did not happen. When no response was received, we followed up only to find that the request was overlooked and had yet to be processed. That is illegal. Request was made to this board on Friday, June 10th, to postpone hearing these agenda items because of this, and no response was received. So here we are this evening with an agenda, with an item on the agenda, for which county processes were not followed, for which an adjacent property owner was not properly informed in all steps of the process, and for which an FOIA request was made and not honored within the legal time frame. Once again, in good faith, you cannot approve or defer these two items. In good faith, you must either deny or remand. Why? Because it's the right thing to do, and because what you have before you is contradictory to your process, failure to respond to an FOIA, and does not even paint a clear picture of the implications of the request for rezoning and special use. The information provided says nothing of the height of the buildings. It only provides a footprint. So how do you know how they will impact the visual appearance of the area retaining the county's rural character, something that Douglas Miles noted in a February 2022 Flavanna Review article was the most significant recurring theme of public meetings regarding the county's comprehensive plan, which points to the conclusion of the staff report stating that the proposed land uses will be generally screened from view, not against our commercial property.
Thank you. Do we have someone else who would like to speak?
Someone's come off mute. Nope, someone went back on mute.
Okay.
We got somebody on?
No, you go ahead, but you have somebody.
They've remuted.
Okay. All right, you can name that person.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chairwoman, Board, my name is Corbin Flynn, 319 Shiloh Church Road. I'm also part property owner of Gate Plaza. One of my thoughts or questions that I can't really wrap my brain around is, why did Mr. Johnston purchase a 6-acre lot that's zoned A1 on Route 53 for $125,000 that has less than 260 foot of road frontage? Current county A1 properties located on Route 53 require 500 feet frontage to build a single-family dwelling. So if he just wanted to build a house on this property, he'd have to get a waiver, I believe, through the county to do so. I'd say that was a big gamble on his part. Or is it possible that he was given the impression that it wouldn't be any problem whatsoever getting rezoned and getting a special use permit allowing him to build 60,000 square foot metal storage units? Just on the road circling Lake Monticello, we currently have 63 acres of B1 undeveloped land. We have 94 acres of R3 undeveloped land that allows some commercial use. This is over 157 acres that by right have commercial development on them currently, or can have commercial development. Just because a neighboring property owner is zoned business doesn't automatically give that neighboring property owner the right to be rezoned to business, nor is it required by the county to do so. I have a great idea. How about the county administration focus on the current B1 and R3 properties and have some responsible growth on those, and then once we develop those, then we go back and start rezoning property if we need more of it. I'm against the rezoning of this property for numerous reasons, which I gave each one of you a packet earlier today consisting of about 150 pages or more outlining those reasons. The Planning Commission basically rubber stamped this onto you guys, and I'm afraid you guys may do the same tonight. As elected officials, it's up to you guys to look out for the residents of this county, not just pass whatever the administration puts in front of you as if they know best. I'm pretty sure it was Mr. Zimmer on the Planning Commission that said, I can't see how we cannot approve this for Mr. Johnston because it's next to B1 property already, almost as if it was a right, not a privilege. If this is the case and the county is going to look at it in such a way that because there's B1 next to it, it ought to be able to have B1 also, then the same requirements and architectural design of the neighboring property should be adhered to. All of his buildings, not just the one fronting Route 53, but the ones that run between the two commercial developments that are visible by the public, should be of Jeffersonian architectural design. The public will see them just as much as the public will see the building facing 53. It's not fair to be one way and not the other. It's not fair to allow the rezoning because of the neighboring property and yet not require that buildings comply with the neighboring property. This may not be something that Mr. Johnston wants, but it's something that the county can require, just like they did with the Dollar General and just like they did with us at Gate Plaza over 18 years ago. If Mr. Johnston is allowed to build metal storage buildings on this lot, it's going to hurt the value of almost all properties around it. If it hurts the value, then the taxes for those properties should come down so that the county gets no gain out of it. Furthermore, if Sal's Restaurant, which was mentioned earlier, happens to go out of business and I have to re-rent that building, what's the likelihood of a new restaurant owner wanting to rent so his customers can come and have a great dining experience out on the patio and look into metal storage buildings, which was pictured earlier? I believe that it could hurt the business owners at Gate Plaza, and if it hurts them,
That's less tax revenue for the county. Nobody goes out and builds a 4,000 square foot brick home next to existing storage buildings. If they did, the value of their new home is now less than what it cost them to build it. And then I'll refer to the County of Ward staff report, your own staff report, the analysis. It says, when evaluating proposed uses for the special use permit, in addition to analyzing the potential adverse impacts of the use, staff utilizes two general guidelines for evaluation set forth in the zoning ordinance. First, underlined, the proposed land use should not tend to change the character and established pattern of the area or the community, which this does. Second, underlined, the proposed use should be compatible with the uses permitted by right in that zoning district and shall not adversely affect the use or the value of neighboring properties.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have someone online?
Ms. Booker, Madam Chair, I don't see anyone coming off loud enough.
Anyone in the audience, please come.
Board. Craig McCormick, 5 Leavenock Court. I'm also the property manager for the Food Lion property. And I just want to make sure that you, from the standpoint of the Food Lion's concerns, are considering, as we saw those pictures earlier of the trees and the buffering, how high are those buildings above Food Lion, the visual impact from 53? We saw the pictures with trees, but it looks to me like the driveway goes all the way almost, you know, close to the property line. If that's the case, is the buffering going to go away? And also, the visual, I'll reiterate what they were talking about, the impact of either the requirement in the past or the result from the past that all the buildings in that area are brick. To have metal buildings overlooking the Food Lion and the other developments when you're going down Turkey Sag, that seems to me a more visual impact negatively than even bricking the small front abutting 53. So we just wanted to express those concerns.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to address the board? If not, I'm closing the public hearing and we'll come back to the board for the discussion. Board members?
I'd like to start by asking Fred if any of the concerns brought up were legal concerns.
Yes, they're based on legal issues. I think Mr. Flynn told you in his written materials that he sent you, I assume you all read them, that he now understands that when he went to the Planning Commission meeting, and of course he's come here tonight to express his views, that by statute constituted a waiver of his right to notice. Now, of course, I say that because he is not the owner, the LLC is, but he's a beneficial owner of the LLC. So if the notice had gone out, it wouldn't have gone to him personally, it would have gone to the LLC. The fact that he appeared and expressed his views at the Planning Commission meeting by statute constitutes a waiver. So that does not invalidate the process. Of course, he's come here again tonight, and the lady, whose name I didn't catch, spoke first, appears also to be associated with that organization, and she spoke too. So that I think that takes care of the notification requirement. The other aspect of it is that's raised here is the failure to make timely return on the Freedom of Information Act issue. That was quite simply an oversight, and I'm not going to beat up Ms. Harris, but as she could tell you what happened, and it's simply a mistake. The problem with that is that obviously this LLC has had a full opportunity to express its opinions and present whatever materials it wanted to. I didn't count the pages when I was reading them, but Mr. Flynn said there were 300 pages of material. And you all got those Did we get him yesterday?
Today. Mr. Flynn brought him in today. Ms. Lindsay brought him in. We emailed them to the board, and then the board members that were here physically present, we hand-delivered hard copies to them. Or actually, Madam Chair stopped by the office.
I got them by email, and they came in, I think, sometime late in the morning. It was, I had not seen the email. There hasn't been any reference made to anything in those materials that would adversely, that would significantly change whatever would have been presented. So I was waiting to hear that you know, something is contained in those documents that either is contrary to the presentation of the staff or the presentation by the applicant, or otherwise would adversely affect, would change the appearance. So I don't see that. It's unfortunate that mistake occurred. I'm sure nobody feels worse about it than Ms. Harris does. But she, I don't see that has a material impact on the presentation for you tonight. But whatever they wanted to present, they have to have now presented.
Thank you.
Anyone else
from
the board would like to ask a question? And I'll get with you, Tony.
Ms. Zebra,
you wanted to.
Well, this is clearly in the comp plan and the growth area for that area. So I think that it has to be considered as any other application will be.
Okay. Mr. O'Brien.
So, based on Mr. Payne's comments, it sounds to me that a deferral would certainly be an option, that we would necessarily have to deny or remand. It seems to me from the comments, there's some concerns with regard to what the aspect may look like and the height of the buildings. I suspect that Mr. Johnson would be very interested in accommodating the concerns of his neighbors, business neighbors there. And the only other question that I would have would be with regard to sort of the repeated inference to colonial style viewpoints or architectural design. So that was, I was a little caught off guard with that because I know we don't have an architectural review board. And my understanding is that there is also on the other side where the Goodwill building, a essentially metal structure building that doesn't have that in place. So I would like that addressed separately. From the two other comments that I made there.
Madam Chairman, I can comment on that. I may have said it before, but this the comment about Jeffersonian style, the best I can determine, that means basically it's got to have some kind of brick facade. I frankly don't remember the I was county attorney. Louisiana County has never had architectural review controls except in the context of a special use permit. So this would, I don't know whether what was required, what was volunteered, what was just agreed to, what it was. But I don't know of any authority that the county had at that time to, or now, other than under the special use permit, to review architectural control.
I think that's basically been the historical society's kind of push from the courthouse, the new courthouse, the sheriff's office, the library. It has kind of been a running thing, but I don't know if it's ever been official.
Two things about that. There have been people, among others, the historical society, which I haven't been a member. They certainly did make input into the design of this building, the design of the sheriff's building, and the design of the of what I'll call the new courthouse. 2001, the year my now college-age granddaughter was born. They did have input. And there's nothing wrong with asking for it, but the county doesn't, the zoning ordinance doesn't have a requirement for that, except in the special use permit context. The other thing is that those are all the buildings you've cited are public buildings. And the any citizen that wants to have input on his neighbor's property has a perfect right to ask his neighbor to do what he thinks is appropriate. And if he can talk the neighbor into it or the neighbor wants to volunteer, he can. And I say, as to the examples you raised, the comments that were made were comments made to this board or county staff, and the county acceded to it. Now, if Mr. Johnston wants to do more, he certainly can. But I don't see that, certainly under the zoning ordinance, that he's in any obligation to.
And also one thing, too, of regarding the Jeffersonian, the brick, you know, we went back to when that whole parcel was rezoned back in 1980, and we pulled the board minutes from 1980, and the case was 80-0006. Mm-hmm. And looking at the official board action, there was nothing in that rezoning case that said, again, we're going by the minutes from back then, but there's nothing specific that talked about that any buildings that are going to be built must be built in that fashion. Now, that's just going back to the minutes from when that whole parcel was rezoned, and that was the parcels on both sides of the road there.
And sorry, Madam Chair, I can elaborate a little bit on that. We did spend in the last week or two a significant amount of time trying to find out where any of the brick Jeffersonian design was done, and it's nowhere to be found. ZMP 8006 Lake Monticello Corporation is who rezoned almost 29 acres from R1 to B1, and that was on June 2nd, 1980. So we went back and looked at what the Planning Commission, they referenced, we wanted to reference that the Planning Commission provided some inputs. We went back to the May 27, 1980 Planning Commission date at that time, and they did not specify anything relative to design whatsoever, as Mr. Payne has indicated. So we fast forward a little bit to 1996, when the Food Lion site sketch plan came through as the first main building that was constructed on the shopping center, at the shopping center. That sketch plan review, the only things that were brought up were actually everything but building design. It was ENS plan, landscaping plan, lighting plan, VDOT approval for the entrance onto Route 53, road improvements to be made at the Route 53 are the responsibility of Food Lion, submission of a $75,000 bond, and Rhode Island's for landscaping on Turkey Sack Trail are to be landscaped by Food Lion. Now, in the packet from Mr. Monty Lewis, the person who was the architect and engineer for the property, there was an elevation for the Food Lion shopping center, the Food Lion building, where they indicated that it would be brick, but there was not a requirement that it was to be brick. If that was something that was done by the Lake Monticello Corporation or the owners of Macon Partners at some point, and a lot of the different pictures that you've seen from Mr. Flynn, yes, it's very nice that we have a lot of our shopping centers that are designed with brick and brick elements. But we, as Mr. Payne said, and the only way in this rezoning and special use permit is we work with the applicant to do an architectural detail, because of some of the other self-storage facilities in the area, we felt that it falls in compliance with that. So, and we even looked into the Guarantee Bank in 1998, and that was not a condition for brick and so on. And as Mr. O'Brien said, later on, the Goodwill Bank, facility is not, but that's also behind and away from 53. So, not to digress, but we did do our due diligence. We also worked with Mr. Flynn immediately when we found out that the entire parcel was shown as parcel C and actually on parcel X. So immediately we worked with our GIS provider and the Commissioner of Revenue to correct that within 3 days. and then also make sure that Mr. Flynn and his gate plaza LLC was notified accordingly for this meeting, which we did on June 2nd.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Miles. Board members, any other?
Ms. Booker, I have a,
yes, go ahead.
I have another question for Mr. Douglas there. With regard to the comment about road frontage, 500 feet versus the 125 feet, could you please address that?
Sure, some of these parcels are quite old. The parcel that is to the north of here, of the subject property, has a house on it that's a rental property. And I don't have it in front of me, but these parcels are quite old. So when parcels are created, they're vested in the time frame. Now, today's standards, we would not allow a parcel with less than 500 feet. So any of the parcels across the street, if they were to be broken up, they would be on 53 being a primary road, wouldn't need to have 500 feet of road frontage. So existing parcels, when we look at existing parcels for one house, we look at when it was created and it was vested or non-conforming to any standards. Typically, then they would be able to construct a house. We actually worked with the applicant to see if they wanted to purchase the other parcel and remove the dwelling there so they had more room to work with. And he indicated that this is all the land that he needed for his request. So we did also try to work out to see if additional acreage could be included in the rezoning.
I assume some of this equipment is pretty sizable. Is there any concern from BDOT with regard to the 125 feet or not?
I'm sorry, Mr. O'Brien, some of their equipment, he doesn't have any equipment. There would be construction equipment that when he constructs the buildings.
Okay, so in the storage facilities, there's no heavy equipment being put in there at all?
No, it's sizable. No, sir, it's not like Mr. Dusty Christian, who has all of his equipment that would be coming in and out of onto Lake Monticello Road.
There's not going to be heavy machinery.
Heavy machinery here, only during construction for maybe 3 months, and then after that, the condition indicates he can no longer have that equipment there, or unless he needed to do a repair or something. You know, 10 years down the road, you would do that for a day or something, but no heavy equipment. And actually, TRC with VDOT, as Mr. Shemp went over, the traffic generation for this request is much less than historically some other properties were looked at for rezoning, such as an automobile repair shop across the street, and that was not approved because that VDOT did have concerns with tow trucks coming in and out onto 53 for the additional trip generations.
What about the height of the building?
Heights of the buildings in B1 is usually not a concern for us, and you also have to look at the elevation and grade of this property. When you're doing screening with combinations thereof of landscaping and berming and planting materials, this will have a chain link fence that would be security around the property. So you have to look into all those aspects. Building height, normally metal one-story buildings are not a problem in B1.
Yeah, but I think what they're asking, and maybe the applicant can provide what the proposed height of the buildings there will be.
Just. Justin Shim back here. We've done a few of these, and I think you'll visit Carlos Burns built a newer facility on the other side of the lake. I think those buildings are only around 10 or 11 feet tall. They're short. They have very slow pitch roofs. It's an 8-foot ceiling in it. Even the larger sort of climate control ones have the very minimum roof pitch slope. So we're not talking about a structure like a house, a large slope roof. It's basically flat. So maybe 15 feet the tallest for the larger buildings, but most of them are 10, 11 feet tall, something along those lines.
So the office building is the same height?
It is. It's essentially integrated within a storage building. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Miles? I thought when I read the packet that it said that the road frontage was 250 feet. What is it, 125 or 250?
I think it's about 250.
Yeah,
it's much greater.
It's 250, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right. Now, it still does not meet the current standard,
no.
But it was basically done before the standard existed, so it's a legally continuing use,
right.
Non-conforming.
Hey, I thought I heard you, Mr. Bryant, and then.
Yes, I know that one of the comments that was made was with regard to perhaps diners sitting outside of Stiles. And again, I'm driving, so I apologize. I can't study the map as well as I'd like. But while I was looking at the maps, it seemed that the section that would come against Sal's was sort of carved out to not have any buildings nearby there. Is that correct or not there? And given the height of the buildings, is that something that would be a reasonable concern that would detract from the value of the property that is already there?
Eric's trying to go to the side. Yeah. We're pulling this south. Yeah. So you'll see.
Sorry, the computer's being a little technical difficulty here.
Is it that last dot there?
No, we're going to. Kelsey put it on right there. See the building?
Right there, yeah.
Right there, see the two.
Is that from the
middle? Sal's is in the far right.
Corner. Sal's is right
here.
Yeah.
So you have no building
right.
Opposite of it.
But that's our offset area for a stormwater facility. So there'd be a little grass berm there and, you know, some landscaping, but there'd be no proposed building in that location.
Does that answer you, Mr. Bryan?
I'm looking at the tree line right now. Does the tree line extend up the entire length of the property there, or is it just, it looks like it's the tree lines on the left and on the rear of it, and then maybe up to about where Sal's is. Is that correct, or am I missing that?
That's correct.
Is there a reason why the tree line would not extend?
It's not right. That's commercial on commercial land, so it's no required buffer there. So we don't show one. And that location is where we have our stormwater facility. So there's some landscaping there, not necessarily a heavy buffer, but it's maybe another probably 50, it's more than 50 feet from the property line.
Excuse me, Mr. Flynn, you can't speak from the audience. You have your hand up and you can't speak.
Okay. So would it be problematic from an engineering perspective to extend that tree line another 50 feet, as you pointed out?
I think what he's saying is take the tree line here and bring it over this way more. I'm not sure if you can see my cursor. Unfortunately, it's not showing up very well.
I can't see it, but I assume, you know, that the building on the far back left is Sal's there. I mean, far back right is Sal's. And it seems to, like, the tree line seems to end to the rear of Sal's. And I'm just asking if it could be extended another 50 feet to go past Sal's. I mean, I know that the back of the Food Line building is, you know, rarely accessed and not very visible for most people. So, you know, to the point of the chain link fence and the height of the buildings, that may not really be a concern there. But, you know, I can certainly appreciate that diners may enjoy the view of the retaining pond, but may also then be subjected to the view of the buildings, assuming that there's no sort of growth on the chain link fence itself.
So to answer the question, could it be done? Yes, it would probably take away from some of Johnson's land, and whether that's reasonable or not, the board can certainly weigh. I would say, you know, that the stormwater pond would have a berm, so if you're looking at it, you would see like a grass berm 6 or 8 feet tall from the patio area. Then beyond that would be the chain link fence, maybe 60 or 70 feet from the property line, and then the building. So yeah, you can see it, but your immediate view is this sort of grass berm, not a fence. It's in the distance, so from there.
Could you picture that, Mr. O'Brien?
I think so.
Any other board members?
So when this first came up, and I talked to Corey, and I felt like I could support this. And one of the comments I made at the time, and I said it has nothing to do with the county or approval, or it's just conversation amongst, you know, business owners, was that I would have imagined that he could have gotten better, I don't even know what I said, but something like another better use of a B1 property or something, meaning where he would have gotten a better return. And I didn't really put my finger on at the time what I was meaning, what was kind of in the back of my head. And it was when I heard from Corbin about his concerns that I almost instantly clicked on, what I was feeling or thinking was that those two types of buildings that close, it was a notably different structures, notably different aesthetically. And I've gone over there a number of times, including yesterday, and I went and looked from every perspective. Certainly there is, when you sit on Sal's porch, you're gonna see, can you leave?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. I was gonna try to go back to the pictures, but yeah, I can leave what's there, I apologize.
Oh, that's okay, thank you. So when you sit on Sal's porch, you are gonna look on metal buildings. And
thank you.
Then when I was standing out in the lot, in the parking lot, and actually I talked to Corey yesterday from the lot, actually, and you can see daylight through those trees, meaning it's elevated, but you can see through, so you're gonna see from the parking lot, you're gonna see those steel buildings. And I just, to be honest, I am struggling with this because if Corbin's concerns are legitimate about what the view shed is of what you're looking on when you're sitting out on that patio, then what he's saying is true, that you're going to look on the side of some metal buildings. But then on the flip side, when I originally thought that, and according to Douglas, it wasn't the case that the county directed that the architecture be of brick and so on. And while talking to Douglas today, it hit me that the Goodwill building is a metal building. And so the buffering that Tony was mentioning, it isn't gonna really do much to buffer what's being seen.
Doesn't make any difference if the sides of brick. You know, you don't see the buildings, I mean, just because it's metal.
Oh, I think it would make a difference, but it's a huge difference in Corey's cost, I think, too.
I realize that.
Yeah. Now, architecturally, or what you're looking on, I certainly think that would make a difference. And speaking of that, you know, I was thinking back to when the Dollar General got passed, and the board made them do that in brick, something that's typically a metal building. And I often look at that building and think, gosh, I'm glad the board did that. I'd say I'm really legitimate.
Which building are you talking about?
The Dollar General building.
Dollar General. Abby.
And I'm legitimately very much in the middle of this. And so back to Corey. Where Corey's business is today is where my business was. My business started in Fluvanna Self Storage. And then eventually that front building was built for my business. And then I wanted to own a building and went out to where NFS is today. And so I understand that whole side of it. My sense is that as it sits right now, however this comes out, other than a deferral, and I'm not even sure what a deferral would bring out of it, this is this is going to be a legitimate negative for somebody.
Well, we have a lot of storage buildings in Plymouth, and you know, I don't drive by and say, oh, that's horrible. I mean, people want, they must be making money, so people must want to store things. And I don't have a problem with it, and particularly with it so long, you're not going to see much. And even when you're sitting back at Sal's, I don't think it would be objective. I eat at Sal's all the time. Sometimes we sit outside and, you know, looking at the parking lot. So I don't have a problem with a storage building for them. We haven't asked any other storage facility to be a special facade.
Yeah, my sense is, you know, that they would be reasonable for the board to defer this to allow Mr. Johnson to you know, have some more conversations with his neighbors and see if there's a greater accommodation there. I'm not against the plan, but I just think that there, you know, some issues were raised, and I would rather give them the opportunity to have that discussion. And you know, maybe be creative in terms of how they do the buffering on that side, if applicable or not. I mean, you could have bamboo up against the fence possibly, or whatever. I don't know, but you know, we have two important business neighbors right there, and I think some concerns are raised, and I don't think this should be denied per se. I do think that there can be some extra steps, and since an SUP is involved, the board has some discretion in those steps as well, too.
All right, so we will bring this discussion to a close, and we need to put a motion.
Lizzo, before you do that, may I ask, did you give your thoughts?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, I just asked little inquiry questions, but I will give my thoughts. I think that I always feel much better when we make a decision and people are kind of, we give an opportunity to clear up things so that people are satisfied. We've heard some concerns, we've tried to answer some of them, and some of them we still can't answer. So if we really want to feel comfortable with what we're doing, then maybe we need to go another step.
Madam Chair, before you go further, Mr. Miles pointed out that you haven't formally closed the public hearing, and you probably should.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I closed it and came back to us.
I don't think you said it. You said those words.
All right, let me go on record. I'm closing the public hearing, and it's back to the board. Okay. All right, we need to put the motion, and we need to decide on what we're going to do.
You need to have a separate motion for each of the two
items. Yes, for each. Now, this one is for the SUP 2202. No,
this is the rezoning.
SUP 2202. This is what rezoning. This is the rezoning motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors defer ZMP 22-02 Johnson & Company, LLC, a request to amend the Fluvanna County zoning map on 6.4 plus minus acres of Tax Map 17, Section 2, Parcel 2, to conditionally rezone the same from A1 General Agriculture to B1 General Business, and subject to the revised proffers dated June 6, 2022.
Okay, a motion is made by Mr. Fairchild. Do I have a second?
That discussion, please.
Go ahead.
Motion needs to be.
Motion needs to be seconded. Motion needs to be seconded first, Mr. O'Brien. I need a second for that motion, please.
Don't hear you in a second, Mr. Bryant.
No, well, I wasn't because I want. Well, I just wanted to raise the possibility that the applicant might still want to have it approved,
We need a second. We can't have a.
I'm not seconding it, so that's up to. That would be up to Mrs. Eager then.
I'm not seconding.
So.
So does that mean we can't have discussion?
Motion fails for one of the second.
So we can continue to have discussion, right?
Yes.
Tony, go ahead.
So my only thought is that this is this motion is to approve from A1 to B1. And you know, regardless as to the special use permit, the applicant may still want that to happen. You may not want that to happen because of the tax implications, but I think our code allows that to not be taxed until the actual use is put in place. But it may make sense to just go ahead and pass and approve this rezoning and defer the SUP. I'll defer to Mr. Payne on his thoughts on that.
That certainly would be in the realm of possibility.
Do we have to state the motion again?
Well, I think Mr. Fairchild's motion has died from what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you can't have another motion.
Okay.
Am I correct that our code would not have an impact as far as the taxes go if it's rezoned but not put into use?
That would be up to the assessor. I can't tell you that. It might very well change the assessment, but it hasn't changed it yet.
I talked to, and that was a concern I was going to mention for Mr. Johnston. So a couple days ago, I called Mel Sheridan, our Commissioner of the Revenue, and I said, my sense is that once this becomes B1, and it's beside other B1 property, and when you do the math of the B1 property beside it, what the dirt alone is worth is roughly around $200,000, assessed at roughly $200,000 per acre. So, Mr. Johnston, if he gets a B1 zoning, Mr. Sheridan's, he suspected. So he said he'd turn it over to the assessment company to where it would be clean, and the assessment company that did the other assessments would do so.
Right.
And all things pointed to that would be a roughly $1.2 million property that he would be taxed on. So if he gets B1 zoning, he could be suddenly getting taxed on somewhere around, once that assessment would go through for the following year, taxed on roughly $1.2 million of value on something that he paid 10% of that for. And if he doesn't have approval for what he's asked to put on there, then that's pretty bad investment.
Well, that's why I raised the question, but I can't recall whether the sort of package that we put together to encourage rezoning was specific to the Zions Crossroads area or not. Because we did put a package together where we essentially said, for economic development purposes, we would allow rezoning, but we would not tax at the new rate until the actual purpose was put in place. So that's a question. And then the second part of that is the fact that the applicant may, yes, he may be paying higher taxes, but he now has a property that has been rezoned for business uses, and that adds a higher value should the use not pass for his own purposes and he wishes to sell it for another value there. So that's why I raise that as, maybe the best of both worlds is if the package that we passed doesn't apply, and maybe the applicant has a particular thought on it. Otherwise, I'm fine with deferring. But I really don't want to force rezoning one way or another. I'm just raising these issues.
So, can we make the same motion? Will we get a second?
I'll make a motion. I move the Board of Supervisors approve ZMP 2202 Johnson & Company, LLC, a request to amend the Fluvanna County zoning map on 6.4 plus or minus acres of tax map 17, section 2, parcel 2, to conditionally rezone the same from A1 general agriculture to B1 general business, and subject to the revised proffer dated June 6, 2022.
Okay, the motion was made by Mrs. Eager. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
All right, and it has been motion by Mrs. Eager and second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Discussion.
All right.
Sorry, he didn't vote, but
Mr. O'Brien.
Neither one of my questions were answered there, so, and the applicant may have, an opinion. So I apologize for being difficult here.
Can the applicant speak to during this?
The applicant can speak if the board allows it. And what I was going to say was that the vote is not complete until Mr. O'Brien stated his vote.
So the two questions at hand were, one, does the exemption with regard to the taxation apply only to Zion's Crossroads area? If that's the case, then it would be a no-brainer for the applicant to say yes. And if it's not the case, then the applicant may say, well, I'm really not interested in doing that right now, but he may also say, yes, I am interested in it. So,
Mr. Dahl has just pointed out that what you're talking about is what I call the Hanover plan. It was first originated in Hanover County. You did adopt that, but it didn't deal with this situation. What it deals with is property that's in land use, that you don't lose your land use and have to pay rollback taxes when it's rezoned. Doesn't have any bearing on this because it's not land use.
Okay. Yeah, and that was some of the discussion that came up specific to Zion's Crossroads, because there was lots of discussion about people wanting to, you know, rezone those properties up there to have them ready to go. But so as Mr. Payne noted, it was more dealing with the land use and the change and the rollback taxes more than B1 to A1 type of an assessment piece.
Okay. What was Tony's other question?
My second thing is then knowing that does not apply, does the applicant have a preference or opinion as to whether it gets deferred or approved?
Do I give him the opportunity?
Mr. O'Brien ask the question.
The applicant, you can answer. You can come forward.
Yes, I'm comfortable with the approval moving forward.
Now, Mr. O'Brien, what did you vote? What was your vote?
I did not vote. I vote yes.
Okay, so we have Mrs. Eager, Fairchild, O'Brien, and Chair votes yes.
Just to make sure the record's entirely clear, Mr. Sheridan is absent.
Mr. Sheridan is absent.
So the vote is 4-0.
Okay, so it's 4-0.
0.
4-0. Next vote is for the building. Is that up? Okay,
yep,
that is for the special use. SUP 2201.
Are we allowed for discussion? Or since
what you really should do this is you should have a motion on the floor and then discuss it.
Okay.
So it should be made and seconded before it's discussed.
Yeah. Anyone ready to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. Move the Board of Supervisors defer SUP 22-01 Johnson & Company LLC, a special use permit request in the B1 General Business Zoning District to permit a contractor storage yard with respect to 6.4 plus minus acres of tax map 17 section 2 parcel 2 and subject to the 8 case conditions in the staff report.
All right, do I hear a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mr. Fairchild and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
But it was at the point we could
have discussion now.
Okay. Go ahead. I just want to say, I want to be able to approve this while I want to seize the opportunity for two, as what was said earlier, two business owners to feel that they come out more whole in this process. And I just feel like stepping back for a quick second might give some opportunity for a little negotiation.
So, Board, when would you want to defer this to? Would you want to defer it to the next meeting? Because remember, so as far as public hearings are concerned, we would have to re-add
public hearings. Yeah.
So
it's
the next meeting, in 2 weeks?
Well, yes, we could. Okay. We could in between this meeting and the July 6th meeting, we've got 2 weeks. So yes, there is enough time to advertise. And then again, that's our only meeting to have a public hearing for the month of July.
You don't need to go through the full advertising. Mm-hmm. Merely, this is merely advertising.
Okay. Yeah. So do we have to say in the minutes when it will come up again?
You should.
Yeah.
Okay, so that date would be July.
It's July 6th. That's the next meeting.
July the 6th. And that's a day, that's a 5 o'clock meeting. But we could do it. We have a 5 and
we have
a
5 and a 7.
Okay.
I think you should see, since this is Mr. Fairchild's motion, if he's agreeable to doing that. And if so, you should specify not only the date, but the beginning time of the meeting, since there are two meetings on the day.
Okay. Sorry.
So how would you like me to word that? Just to include that it would be...
Until July 6th.
Deferred until July 6th at the...
7.
It'd be 5 o'clock.
Well, you could do 5 or 7. We have two meetings. I mean, normally if, you know, maybe if...
7.
Normally you have zoning managers.
7 o'clock.
Okay.
But that's to accommodate public.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my part of my motion is to defer to the 6th, was it?
July 6th at 7 p.m.
At 7 p.m.
And this will not have a public hearing, or
will?
No.
It's over. Okay. It'll be a public meeting, but there will be no public hearing.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And I'll just add to that that, and I'm not asking for anything of anybody, but I have, in paying attention to this matter for the past weeks, seen that there are other types of screening on fences and so on that might aid in some of the concerns.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have to take into consideration, too, with trees. I mean, you see trees now, you can't see anything. From what about in the fall when the leaves are down? Mm-hmm. Those kind of things too.
Storage facilities like this, generally they have to have a not a screen, but a fence around it for safety.
And you mentioned that they're going to have a fence around it. Yeah.
Right, and that's to keep the people's in this storage area safe.
I could be wrong, but I think it was the one in Zion's that I saw that there's a black, for lack of a better term, screening on the outside of the fencing around those units, and just that type of thing comes to mind.
Well, that's something that, you know, I'm all for people coming to agreements, but if they come to an agreement, they've got to come to an agreement on not only that the bee fencing, the bee screening, but that they specify it. There's apparently, what's being asked for by the neighbors is not what's required by the neighbors.
Yeah, the pros and cons of fence screening are, one, it screens the people that are around it, and the possible con side of that is then from a visibility standpoint, making sure someone's not doing things they shouldn't be doing behind the screen, if someone, you know, I mean, yeah. That's worst case scenario, so someone gets over it, but those are the kind of the flip side to it.
All right, well, thank you. We will go on to action matters.
We need to complete the vote.
You vote on the motion.
Oh, I voted.
I don't think so.
No, you did not.
Okay, I voted. That's chair votes yes. Did we defer?
I'm confused as to the vote. I don't
so remember. Tony, did you second?
You made the motion.
I seconded the motion.
Mr. Right. O'Brien seconded.
So Moselle voted yes. So that's a.
And I don't think I don't think Mrs.
Zeger has not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the vote is unanimous.
Remember, I talked to you about four.
All four members, including Mr. O'Brien,
yeah.
Present, voted in favor.
Yeah, that was the conversation. Yeah. Okay, now we're going to action matters, and you're welcome to stay through all of the meeting. Oh, you're leaving?
My wife told me to be home in time for bedtime, and I'm probably not going to make that. So
I'll stay. Okay, well, be safe.
Thank you all.
Okay, action matters. D, 2020 FPA TI grant three-party agreement. Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick on this. So just you remember the board, the Virginia Department of Housing and Community Development has been authorized to distribute and administer funds awarded through VADI. Fluvanna entered into a multi-party, multi-jurisdictional cooperative agreement titled Phase 1 Memorandum of Understanding. And that was dated March 1, 2021, where Fluvanna agrees to support Firefly and other parties in providing universal broadband. Participating counties that also participated were Albemarle, Amherst, Appomattox, Buckingham, Campbell, Cumberland, Goochland, Green, Louisa, Madison, Nelson, and Powhatan. Also, the board also in August 18, 2021, unanimously approved and supported participating in the regional project, and they also provided a match for the expansion of broadband in the amount of $601,500, and those funds were coming from the county's ARPA allocation. In addition, the participating counties cooperated in the VADI 2022 grant application process. The TJPDC is the primary applicant, Firefly is a co-applicant, and all the parties are also participating counties remain committed to the broadband. So really what the board is approving, they're basically approving or considering the agreement between the parties, TJPDC, Firefly, Fluvanna County, and it just basically outlines the work and the responsibilities of the grant as we move forward. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, and Gary Wood, we could phone a friend with Gary Wood if we have to, and then we have TJPDC here too, Christine Jacobs, she could certainly answer questions on this if they're needed.
Okay, so would you all like to have Mr. Wood and...
We have any questions?
No, but that's your okay. Unless you want to add anything, you're okay. All right. Thank you. All right. I only have one question. So yeah, I have one question. What do you guess, Mr. O'Brien? Tony, go ahead. Oh, he must be in a zone that lost connection. Did you? He's there, but...
Yeah, he's there and he's unmuted.
Oh.
I think he dropped out.
Okay, Mr. Ryan. We're going to move forward.
Going once?
Yes. The burn building project agreement.
Well, we got the motion. The
okay.
Motion.
All right, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a long one.
Let me say that a motion is made that simply refers to the language of the motion expressed in the staff report. That would be fine without you having to read it all.
Okay, who wants to make that motion to Fred?
Did I just hear Tony possibly back on?
I think I heard.
Yeah. Tony? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
So, Fred, say it again, please.
Sorry.
What did you say? Say what you said again, please.
He's saying you can either make the motion or you can refer to the motion.
You
approve the
motion
on the screen.
You refer to it as stated in the text.
I make the motion to approve as stated in the staff report.
Mm-hmm. Okay, second. All right. It was motioned by Mr. Fairchild and second by Mrs. Speaker. Okay.
Madam Chairman, with respect to Mr. O'Brien, it appears. I don't know that anybody knows, it appears that he has temporarily lost his connection.
Right.
Because he's traveling, so he can't find the car.
Okay.
And so the reason for his not appearing on the boat is that apparently he's out of control, he's out of communication.
He's logged back in, just for the board's knowledge, and he's muted.
Okay. So we're going to carry that motion.
I'm in favor too.
All right.
Yes.
Okay.
Aye.
And chair votes yes. All right. Now, Mr. O'Brien, did you have something to say earlier?
I just wanted to ask Mr. Wood how many employees were now located in the Fluvanna facility. Wasn't really related to the VADI grant, but
well, and Mr. Wood will be coming up to do a Firefly update
too, right.
A presentation.
So
we could
That'll give me time to count.
All right, so we'll wait on that one for you, Mr. O'Brien.
And, thank you very much.
Okay. And then we are with E, the burn building.
Yeah, Miss Allen's on there, but I'm a little more familiar with it. So there's two motions here. One's for an agreement and one's for a budget transfer. And this is maybe a little longer, but I'll try and be quick. And it's more for Mr. Fairchild's benefit, just because the board's a little familiar with the status of the burn building or the fire training building. So the county's gone through numerous invitation for bids for this. The last invitation for bid, the bid came back at $987,000. Currently, the county has a grant from the Virginia Department of Fire Programs for $480,000. $450,000 is for construction, $30,000 is for architecture and engineering. But the $450,000 for construction is specific to the building, the concrete pad and building the building. So any site work or anything like that is not included. So when that last bid came in, we're short by $537,000, and the board, and again, too, just to touch on that, that also did not include any contingency fund, special inspections, construction administrations, electric and water hookups. So at the time, the board decided to let's go ahead and reissue an IFB with no changes at that point to see if anything came back less. Well, shortly thereafter, and I'll show this and I'll kind of show you the next piece. This is a summary of where our bid came in. So you can see it came in at $987,000. The building was $478,000. So again, we can use $450,000 of the grant. So you see we're short $28,000 basically for the building. But some of the big costs, and if you look at some of these other projects that were complete, our site work, our general conditions, and our overhead and profit, it was significantly more than a lot of the other projects, and you can't use grant funds for that. So that just kind of shows the last bid that we did. So after the board said, well, you know, we want to move forward, the burn building committee, which is some of the chiefs, came back and said, hey, you know what, we were made aware of a building in Harrisonburg. It's got a different design. They toured it, and because of the design, it was thought that it could be it can be done in a more affordable manner. It could be the hope was it'll be cheaper, is really what it is. So the board approved some additional design costs back in January of 2021 to design the building, which hopefully will produce a cheaper overall project. Now that was, you know, also kind of at the beginning of when costs are going up, so we're not sure where that's going to be. But again, the building kind of design work was done, and this is just kind of a showing you a picture of the Harrisonburg building and what is being proposed for the Fluvanna building. So just kind of showing, you know, a concrete apron and the style of the building. Again, you know, there's heat panels, showing the sides, there's doors, you know, there's stairs going up to the roof of the building. You know, that's kind of the upper area of the building. You know, a sloped roof to kind of do some training on, a rooftop prop, again, another rooftop prop, you know, a wide staircase and landing, and kind of showing what the rooms would look like. And so that's just kind of giving you a backdrop of what the building is. What you have before you is a request for $1,000. So the one thing that, in doing it this way, there was discussion with the board, too, about potentially allowing this to be split up in different ways. One, right now, the way it went out as an invitation for bid, it's one project. Someone bids on the site work, the construction, and everything. Well, there was conversation that there may be some vendors and contractors or local that may want to do just the site work only and may do it maybe for cheaper. So the $1,000 request breaks the plans out so it can be, it provides some option alternative. Someone could bid on the site work only, they could bid on the building construction only, or they could bid on both. And the $1,000 separates the plans accordingly, so those that are bidding on each one can do so, and the plans reflect that. So again, whoever if two separate contractors were the lowest, and let's say one contractor bidded on site work only, one contractor bidded on construction only, as long as those two are cheaper than one contractor that bidded on the whole project, we would have to go with the two lowest bids. Invitation for bid is lowest price, absolute lowest price. So again, the $1,000 is to separate the plans, so when the bids go out, and if it's separated, we can do the project that way. So we would hope to issue the third invitation for bid on this project. Again, this is going to be the third one within the next month. Allow 45 days for that bid to go, for it to be out. And once the bids come in, we'll see where the price comes in at that point. And if it's above what the grant is, which I expect it will, then the board will have to make a decision at that point. What do they want to do with the grant? You know, is it going to cost an additional $200,000 above the grant? Is it still going to come in around $1 million? And then the board will have to make a decision at that point. So again, that's really the motion. One motion is for the A&E firm to break out the plans, and motion number two is $1,000 budget transfer for that work.
Okay, any questions? Is Mr. O'Brien on again?
I'm here.
Yep.
Okay. All right, you heard that presentation of Mr. O'Brien?
I did, thank you for checking.
Okay. Motion number one, do we have someone to make that motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the amendment to project agreement number two, term contract between Clinton County and Draper Aid and Associates for professional services for the Fort Canyon Fire Training Building to complete site development plans, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as determined by the county attorney.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mrs. Eager and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $1,000 from the FY22 BOS contingency budget through the FY22 fire training building CIP budget for the site development plan updates.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mrs. Speaker and second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0. Now we have F, Motorola Solution Maintenance Support and Life Cycle Management Purchase Agreement with that.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and the board. I'm Donna Allen. I'm the new purchasing officer for the county now.
Welcome. Oh. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm putting in a motion for an maintenance agreement with Motorola Solutions, Inc. is to be set, and it expires at 6:30 of 22 for the public safety emergency communications radio system maintenance services. A new six-year agreement has been negotiated between Motorola 911 and the county attorney's office. The amount and the initial term of the proposal purchase agreement is included in the FY23 of the E911 budget. And this is our breakdown from this whole thing. I came up with an increase each year of 3.97% per year, showing each year that yes, it is going up, but it's going up because of our multi-discount year contract.
Yeah, and again, we've got an agreement in place. It's just set to expire at the end of this month. And Michael Grandsaff, the Director of Communications, he could certainly speak more about this. We've had an agreement. This is for the big public radio system. It's just the cost to keep the system operational and the repairs and support and all that stuff. Again, you see the maintenance costs of $400-some thousand a year going up, and then down below is core-only services. Remember, Louisa County is on our core, so they also pay for 50% of the core-only services for the maintenance components. But like I said, we would happy to
How long was the term of the agreement that's expiring?
I believe it was 6 years. Okay. Yeah.
So pretty much
2017.
Yeah.
Okay. So the terms are pretty much in keeping with where it's been.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the last one was actually 5 years, expired in June of this year.
Yeah. Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Okay. We have a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the maintenance support and lifecycle management purchase agreement between Humana County and Motorola Solutions Incorporated for the public safety emergency communications radio system maintenance services, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Fairchild, second by Mr. Speaker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, and the chair votes aye, 4-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to the appointments. And we had fun with them the last time. So I have been looking at them. If you could put up the section that says discussion, because we need to find out how many people we have had
discussion.
It'll tell us how many people we need for each of those.
Oh, what's that, Caitlin? Link.
In my board packet, it said discussion. Okay. And it says how many people we need in each.
Oh, yeah.
Each.
This area?
We're just right here.
Discussion.
All right.
Yeah.
Economic Development and Tourist Advisory Council at large, 5 positions available for this term. Now, give a little history. As long as I've been on the board, whenever we have had the incumbent with that little I in parentheses, we don't look at, they are automatically come back to that particular committee. The only reason why, when you get on a committee, that you're off the committee is if you have rules like you miss 3 unexcused days, the chairman can write you a letter and say you're no more on the committee. Or if someone feels that you are not doing your part, a good participant in that committee, on that board, they could ask you to leave. You could stay, according to these committees, you could stay on there for years and years and years unless we change something in the future. So if we're looking at the economic development at EdTech, we need 5 positions. Let's look at how many people are already on the board and then decide on.
Is it only 5?
That we need 5 positions.
We need 5 positions.
We need 5 appointments.
5 appointments. How many are already on the EdTech that has the incumbent decided?
What's that?
Go up.
Hold on. Let me go back here really quick.
See, I put 5 positions available.
Yeah, so there's 5 positions available.
Right.
Yeah. So we already have three. So here's 3. Peggy Shanklin, she was a new incumbent. She was appointed, I think, just in March of this year. She filled someone's term. Angela Chainer and Kathleen Kilpatrick, they have been on for their full term. So you have 3 incumbents, and then you've got, what do you have here, 7 new applicants. So going back to your question about the incumbent, it's not law that the incumbents, but the board, as a practice piece, has generally...
That's been our practice, yes. And until we change it. Now, if you look at Edna Harris is already serving on, I think she's on Region 10.
Partnership for AG.
Yep.
And
Partnership for AG.
And Partnership for AG.
Yeah, I think there's...
Now, if you look at her form, she has checked at least 5 or 10 things on the form. So she'll always, I think she comes up somewhere else. So let's look at the individuals that are not on a committee for the county if we want to.
So this is probably the best sheet, because here in the notes section, it shows mm-hmm. what committees they're on. So as you spoke right. about Ms. Harris, Edna Harris, she's on Region 10 Community Services Board, mm-hmm. Fluvanna Partnership for Aging, right. and the Library Board of Trustees.
Yes.
With the exception of Brittany Gray and Sandra Patterson. Mm-hmm. So you got Brian Miller,
yes.
Jeffrey Brunk, Ben Shaw, Catherine Tatro. Those are four individuals that are not on a county board, right. committee, or commission.
So we already have identified three that's on there, right?
Yes. Would you want to have any of the applicants that are here for this particular?
Certainly. If they would like to come up and speak.
Yep. Come on up.
Come up and speak. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Catherine Tejo. Call me Kathy. I'm a recent grad of Florida Leadership Development Program, just graduated, and I'm working currently on the art studio tour that we're going to do in October on the 15th. And that's really all the big committee work that I've been doing here in the county. But as I got more and more involved in the studio tour and the possibilities of bringing people from outside the area in, bringing money into the community, I just kind of like the whole idea, and I like the idea of being able to continue to help in some ways to grow our economic development here. So that led me to apply.
Thank you.
And I think I think Jeffrey Brunk was here. I'm not sure where he was.
He left.
Yeah. Okay, so the Jeffrey Brunk was here.
Okay.
And then again, you have Ben Shaw. And he spoke at one of the previous, the last meeting,
yes,
about a different position. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure Brian Miller. No.
What did Ben Shaw speak at the last meeting?
Yeah, Ben Shaw spoke in for EDA.
Must have been EDA.
Yeah, it was EDA. EDA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he works for the Department of Veterans Services.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we want to make a decision on two.
Yep, so if you go, so right here, so you got the incumbents. If, mm-hmm. again, those are the three, if the board decides to keep the incumbents reappointed, and then you've got the others. You need two additional.
You need two additionals.
Well, how about
Catherine,
Brian Miller.
Oops, sorry.
Catherine and Brian
Miller.
I was very impressed with Mr. Shaw, I will say, as well, too. I don't know, I think Mr. Miller spoke as well, too, but I can't recall. And I know that Ms. Shecklin, she's trying to get very involved, so I would certainly want to see her continue, given that she's only been on the board for a little while. I can't speak for Ms. Kilpatrick or Ms. Chainer one way or another. I think that any of these people could do a good job serving here.
And I'm sorry, Tony, before you started talking, Trish said something and I didn't catch everything you said. What did you say, Trish?
I recommended a lady,
Catherine
Tetro,
that came up to speak. And if you want to recommend Ben Shaw, that's up to you, Tony.
Yeah, I would certainly recommend him.
Can you tell me anything about him?
No, I just thought that his presentation when he spoke to us last time was good. That's all I can say. Seemed like you want to get involved, and I was impressed with that, that's all.
Okay, did everybody agree? Those two, and that would be the five, the three that's already there, and the two additional.
I agree with that.
Okay. Next is Social Services Board. Sandra Patterson is the chair of the board presently,
I'm sorry, my mouse is doing weird
your
things.
Your mouse, get your yeah. mouse is jumped out. I thought it was me.
No, it's I don't know when it's
okay.
done.
One position available. No.
Yeah, for Social Services
yes.
Board, Cunningham District, there's one position available, and then so Gina, Leslie Woodfolk, and then James Wilkin.
All right, Leslie Woodfolk is on the JABA Advisory Council. She has a position. So,
do you want me to pull up to see which ones have? Here, let me go back to here. So, well, let's see here.
Leslie Woodfolk. There she is.
Yeah, she's
on
the...
She's on the job board.
Yep,
so.
Job advisory and
right.
job board. Mm-hmm. So Gina and James Wilkin
right.
are not on
yes, and both
board.
Of them in the Cunningham area, so you pick.
Well, it's a hard pick because...
It is.
One, Gina has been chair of this board of supervisors.
He's been on the
Social Services Board,
mm-hmm.
and then Mr. Wilkin has a heck of a resume in this field, and has reached out to me.
Is Mr. Wilkin in the audience? I know Gene is there.
Gene could not make
okay.
it. He wanted to, but
he's online.
Oh, awesome.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, you may speak, Mr. Art.
No.
I'm here.
Well,
If I'd have known you were listening, I'd have said more good about you.
Yeah, I know. I sent an email out last night to each of you to tell you what I've done. And I don't know if you've gotten it or not,
yes.
but I was on the board 7 years, and I was on the CPMT, so for all that time, I think I was on the Social Service Board for 1 year. That's some time back. But I know... the clientele that we're dealing with, I dealt with all the money, I dealt with all the problems on the CPMT. I have a real heart for social services. I'm on Meals and Wheels now, and we've been subs for a year or so, and then we have a district, but we've driven across this county many, many times now, and seen the poverty, and you know, most of the people that we're dealing with on Meals on Wheels have decided to stay in their homes, but many of them are just can't get around very much, and they need a lot of support. And I also, you know, the people I know, one of you on that board is on the board with me, and she knows me pretty well. But I had tried not to be involved with the board. Some people that were on the board, they like to, you know, be involved. I have not tried to do that. I've gotten involved twice. Once was when we had a 55-mile speed limit on 53, and I was asked by a person to get a hold of VDOT, and I did. And the guy was Alan Saunders, who was just new there, and we had a long talk. He agreed to look into it, and eventually in August of 16, he called me on the phone one evening right before he came into you guys and said, yep, they approved it. And that, to me, is one of the biggest things that ever happened in my life, to be able to save the lives on 53 by reducing from 55 to 45. When I got on the board, one of my things that was very apparent, I was from the lake, and there was nothing I could do for the lake because they had their own government, but I could do a lot for outside the lake, and I was very involved with that. But and the other thing is, the board asked me to do a job to get Country Creek Way, where I lived on the VDOT, and I did that. But those are the only things that I really got involved with. Except I was on the library board last year, and those ladies on the library board really have it together. And I didn't have much to do there, so I resigned as of this month. So because they've got it together, and I'm hoping you'll get somebody else that is interested. I love the library. I was very involved with the library when it was built. But, you know, social services got has really got my heart. And that's where we spend a lot of money in social services and in CPMT, because we have a lot of problems. And some of these things you can't really even discuss. But I would like to be very much involved again with that, and be able to spend some time the next couple of years helping this county deal with that problem. So.
Okay. Well, thank you,
Mr. Rock. This is Trish Eager, and I don't know if it's if you would mind or it's proper to share with the board what you did for some people that you deliver food to. Do you know what I'm talking about? If you'd rather or not, I won't.
I did something, I guess a year or so ago, and this was in Meals on Wheels, and I haven't really told very many people about this, even the people that live there. But there's a little road up in Troy that we used to, there were two people in there we were delivering meals on, and there were so many potholes in that road. It was really unbelievable. It was really pathetic. And it's not a county road or anything. It's called County Road. Isn't it? I think it's County Road. County Lane, I think it is. And so when I got my $1,400 from the president, which I didn't need, I'm sorry, but I didn't need it, I put that against about four loads of gravel on there. And it really, they really appreciated it. And then I drove back on there, and it just, now they, you know, you've got to do a little ranking on that, which they didn't do, but it really, over a period of time, has made that road so much more usable and for those people. And it was just kind of, it just broke my heart that they had to live in that. It was a third world road. It was a third world road in this county, and we don't do anything about it. So, yeah, I hate to even bring it up, but that's what happened, and I'm very happy that I did it.
And that's why I asked if you wanted me to talk about it or not. But Mr. Rock called me, and he said, told me the problem with this road. It's in my district, and I know of the road, and I've ridden on it. I've been down it, and he asked me what he had to do it. I said, well, it's a private road. All you need to do is talk to the people who live there and ask them and have their permission. But I was overwhelmed when he decided to do that. So I've not told anybody about this before.
Well, thank you, Mr. Art.
Plus, I noticed your names on this building as I came in this evening. I've never noticed that before. On the plaque.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Twice.
So we are straight with Mr. Ott,
who's
on his Social Security,
Ms. Booker, no objection to Mr. Ott, but if there's anybody else here that wants to speak, I think we should give
that opportunity. Yeah, I asked. No one wanted to speak, Tony. I did that.
Okay.
Mr. Webb, yes. We don't want to slight anyone. Okay, well, what's the next one we had? Was your computer is jumping around.
You had Social Services Board. Well, these actually two are easy. You have one for the Columbia District for Social Services Board. You have the incumbent, and that's the only individual. Mm-hmm. And then for the Parks and Rec Advisory Board, you have five incumbents and one new individual. There's five positions open, and there's five people
right
there. So
is Mr. Cook Jr. here? So Mr. Nelson H. Cook Jr. go on there. So we have all of them covered. So now we need the major. We need the motion. Can we remember who we put on the?
Yeah, I think you all said Catherine Tatro and then Ben Shaw, and then the three incumbents.
Right.
For EdTech.
Okay. Who would like to make that motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following Board, commission, or committee appointments. And didn't we last time, we didn't have to do every name, or didn't we say something like those?
I think to make it very clear, in this case, since there was so much discussion in so many places, I think it would be appropriate to name them.
Peggy Shankling, Angela Chainer, Kathleen Kilpatrick, Ben Shaw.
And then?
And Catherine Tantra.
Can go back to social
services. Social services, Jean Opt.
And
Sandra Patterson. Parks and Recreations, John Bishop Larson, Sandra Patterson, Walter Hussey, Raghvendra Singh, Nelson H. Cook Jr.
Okay, thank you. All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. Fairchild, second by Mrs. Heather. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. 4-0. Thank you. Okay. Now we are with presentations. Regional Transit Vision Plan. Lucinda Shannon, Regional Planner Thomas Jefferson, Regional Planning District Commission. Boy, this is a long time.
And just let me know when you want to go to the next slide.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time and letting me be on your agenda this evening. My name is Lucinda Shannon. I work with the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. And I just want to talk with you today about the Regional Transit Vision Plan. The TJPDC applied for a DRPT Technical Assistance Grant with matching support from Albemarle County and the City of Charlottesville. Some of the comments from the original stakeholder meeting that we had back in the summer of 2021 requested more rural involvement. So we have been working with the planning staff for the rural counties, and we're here with you tonight. I just want to give you a little background on what we've done so far, share the draft vision statement and goals, and go over the proposed network scenarios, and then outline our next steps. So the next slide. Keep going. And one more. Thanks. So this is a collaborative effort to evaluate and establish a clear long-term vision for transit for our region, and it is the entire region, not just the city and Albemarle County. The project's led by TJPDC and is supported by DRPT, Albemarle and Charlottesville. It started in the summer of 2021 with a transit propensity analysis. So the first step that we took was to do a bunch of studies, look at the existing land use maps, look at all the comprehensive plans for the entire region, and kind of develop a transit market potential. So we looked at where the jobs were, where people were living, where we expected growth, and estimated where transit could be in the future. And then we did some public outreach, and we kind of identified the goals, values, and priorities for the community, for the region. We solicited community and stakeholder input. We had a public meeting, a stakeholder meeting, and a public survey. We also met with stakeholders several times. The Regional Transit Partnership is the advisory committee for this project, and right now we're in the develop and evaluate phase, where we have developed a kind of draft network or vision of what transit services could be for this region, and we are engaging board supervisors, the public, and stakeholders to see what they think about the network. We'll take those comments, revise the plan a little bit, and then make a final recommendation in August of this year. And that final recommendation will be at the Regional Transit Partnership meeting. Next slide, please. So I just kind of want to go like big picture of what this study's doing, and I don't know if any of you have heard about the governance study that the TJPDC applied for. which would be following the vision study. So this study is to look at what we could do for the region for transit. And it's kind of like all of the things we'd like to buy. And then the next study that we're hoping to do would be a transit governance study that would start in July, and that would tell us how we could generate the revenue to support those projects that we've identified, and also govern those projects and govern the revenue that would be generated in an equitable way that worked for all of the counties in the jurisdiction. Next slide, please. So the main themes that we identified for the vision statement were equity, multimodality, and climate change. For equity, it means expanding opportunities for all residents and representing the needs of both urban and rural communities. We really heard from the rural communities that this was an important project and they wanted to be involved in it. Multimodality is to reduce reliance on automobiles, and then climate change was also identified by the community as one of the main goals for the plan. So that would be to help protect the environment and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The next slide, please. So I'm going to go over the two vision concepts that we've identified and come up with. And these were developed over a 3-day workshop with the three transit providers, Jaunt, CAT, and UTS. We met with them over 3 days and came up with a plan of what they think would be a feasible network for the future of transit in the area that also meets the goals that identified by the community. If you can go to the next slide, please. So we have the constrained vision and an unconstrained vision. For the purposes of estimating an expanded network for this concept, we wanted to make sure that the vision that we were coming up with was something that was implementable. So we looked at gathering a funding source similar to what the Central Virginia Transportation Authority does, and we calculated how much, if we had the same type of transportation authority as Central Virginia has, we calculated how much revenue this region would bring in. And then assumed that that would be about $26 million in additional funding for transit. So that's what we based our constrained vision on. So that first network, the constrained vision, is something that we think is attainable through those types of mechanisms. The unconstrained vision, we wanted to be ambitious and creative and come up with, you know, what we could do if there was no budget and there was no defined limit on funding for that concept. Next slide, please. And one more slide. And one more. So I'm just going to show a little bit, and I hope this was in your packet. It's kind of hard to see on the map. But the constrained vision, expands the routes that we have. And so there would be new routes that would go out to the rural counties, and they would, as you can see on there, they would be a fixed route, and they would be a consistent 7-day-a-week service from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then there would also be the Jaunt service that is the inter-county service that they currently have now. You can go to the next slide, please. So the current service that we have, and you can see Fluvanna County is outlined in red, the existing regional network is 3 days a week, and it's from 8:30 to 4 p.m. If you go to the next slide, for the constrained vision, it would be 5 days a week, 7 days a week from 7 to 8 p.m. So that would be a significant increase in the amount of services available to the residents of this community.
So when you did the route, the red line, did it stop in, I saw Lake Monticello, did it stop in Palmyra?
Yeah.
It didn't go any further.
Right. So what it would be is, it would go to Palmyra, and there would be connecting services that would get to that area, so then you okay. could go into Charlottesville okay. on that fixed route.
Mm-hmm.
And Jot wouldn't change.
Jot would not change. This would most likely be an addition to Jot services.
Okay.
So if you go to the next slide, the unconstrained vision, if you click it one more time, yeah, that pops up. So the unconstrained vision would have that fixed route every 60 minutes, and then there would be a microtransit service around Palmyra that would be kind of like Uber or Lyft, where you could phone in, or you could use your phone and an app or a computer and schedule a ride. And the estimated wait time that we would shoot for would be 15 minutes. So you could schedule your ride that day, 15 minutes, and it would be within that zone, but then that would connect you to the fixed route that goes every 60 minutes back and forth to Charlottesville. Next slide, please. So these routes would go to Scottsville, Crozet, Lovingston, Palmyra, Louisa, and Rockersville, and they'd be 60 minutes, 7 days a week. And then the new on-demand transit zones would be Crozet, Esmont, Scottsville, Lake Monticello, Zion Crossroads, and the town of Louisa, Earliesville, and Keswick. Next slide, please. So if you look at kind of the top bar is the baseline network of what you currently have now, and the bottom bar is what would be in the unconstrained vision, and it shows an increase in the amount of services for residents and jobs. So if you look at the bar, like 37% of your residents would be in proximity to use the on-demand zone. So that would be an increase in the number of services available to the residents of Fluvanna County. And then at the bottom bar is the amount of jobs that would be accessible using the new transit services. 19% would be within the 60-minute fixed route, and 25% would be within the on-demand zone. And that makes almost 50% of the jobs. It would be a 50% increase in the amount of jobs that are available. Next slide, please, and one more. Thank you. So our next phase that we're in right now is this last round of public engagement. Our objective of this public engagement is to confirm the draft vision goals, to explore the long-term transit alternatives for the region, and to collect preferences on the alternatives and future outcomes. So in June, we're presenting to local elected bodies, as I'm presenting to you here tonight. We launched a survey this week. We're updating the project website, and we're having focus groups this week as well. For transit-dependent populations, we want to make a special effort to reach out to them. And we will be surveying bus riders at the transit center and having some pop-up events around Charlottesville and Albemarle. And on June 23rd, we're going to have it's a Zoom meeting. It's an open house kind of public stakeholder meeting where we'll go over the presentation and get feedback from the public and stakeholders during that time. It's at 6:30 p.m. And I have a flyer if anybody's interested in that. And then in July, we're going to complete the local presentations and continue to update the project website, close the survey on July 15th, and then in August, we'll present the final recommendations and the completed plan to the Regional Transit Partnership on their August 25th meeting. Next slide. But one more, yeah, that's all. So, any questions?
You haven't figured, like, the cost?
Yeah, actually, we have. So, this region spends about $20 million a year on transit services. That's combined CAT and JAUNT. And the way that it's estimated, the constrained vision would be about $25 million. And the unconstrained vision is about $70 million.
This is for the whole area now?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea what it costs to provide what you want to FUVANA?
I have not broken FUVANA out, but if you would like, I can email you that.
Okay. Now, with the bus system, does the bus drop people off at certain spots? Like, do they take them to work, like UVA and Moffitt? How does that figure that all that I get?
Within the county, there's like that micro transit zone, and that's door to door. So that will pick you up at your door and take you to, as long as it's within the zone, the door of the business or place that you're going to. If it's outside of the zone, the plan is that you would connect to a fixed route bus and take that. So I guess I should have had more of the city maps here, but the city would be, in the services within the urbanized areas would be increased tremendously.
Okay.
So most of the services would be about 15-minute intervals between the buses, mm-hmm. so it would be a lot easier and quicker to use those systems.
Mm-hmm.
So you could take the bus in and then
get on a CAT bus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great need, and it's like right now people go into the city on JAUNT to the doctor's office. They have to stay all day until JAUNT comes back and pick them up.
I have heard that in the focus mm-hmm. groups this week.
Yes.
Especially with $5 a gallon too.
Yeah. We did speak with them. With some of the focus group participants, and with the new system, they would be able to, because there's the micro transit service within the service area, within like the urbanized areas as well. So one of the things that we worked on Tuesday was people could go to Centerra, and there's a micro transit service in Hantops, and they could catch a ride into the city of Shelbyville or the Barracks Road Shopping Center, do their shop, like go to their doctor's appointment and then take a bus to do their shopping and then get picked up again to go back to their rural community.
So when do we really get involved with the discussion?
So I think what's gonna happen, like this is the open comment period now.
Okay.
So until June 15th, you can email me. Please encourage your constituents to take our survey and participate in the public meeting. And I will be accepting comments up until July 15th. And then I think for the Board of Supervisors, we will be engaging you again once the governance study starts. And our objective for the governance study is to really work with all the counties and be inclusive and come up with a plan for funding these services that works for all of the counties, both urban and rural, together.
All right. That's exciting.
So Linda, could you speak real briefly as to how sort of the micro transit work? Does that be part of the fee that you pay, or is that something that you're ordering your own Uber to get there?
So it would be charged. The details haven't been worked out on how much, but it would be a publicly subsidized service similar to riding JAUNT or CAT. In fact, JAUNT and CAT are free right now, so we haven't gone into that detail, but it wouldn't be as expensive as Uber or Lyft. It would be more reasonable. And I don't know if you all are aware, right now Albemarle County is going to do a transit expansion plan where they are going to try microtransit in the Pantops and Route 29 North area. So there's a pilot program that should happen within a year that can kind of demonstrate how those services will work.
Okay. How do we get, where's your survey?
We're,
it's,
you have, in fan mail this week.
Yeah. We're going to push the survey out in fan mail. I mean, it's an online electronic survey.
It's a, yeah. Okay.
And there'll be flyers here in the county administration office as well.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Anything else from the board? Okay. Mr. O'Brien, anything?
Yeah, just a random thought, but were strategies such as maybe the use of e-bike stations considered as ways to supplement the microtransit? With the advent of these e-bikes, you could see it being pretty easy to kind of get from one park to another for those that are physically fit enough to do so, and it would meet their needs. But I love the idea of expanding rural transportation, so critical to not just for the environment, but also for those who, are constrained by their finances and or ability to drive. Just anything that we can do to make it better for people to be able to access other areas of Central Virginia, I think it's wonderful. And so that just popped into my head, because you see these people ride these e-bikes for, they can ride it 10 minutes and travel 14, 15 miles roughly. So that's pretty, well, not that far, but I'm sorry, maybe 5 miles. So I just didn't know if that was any part of the strategy there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We will go to Firefly Broadband Update. Galen Creekmore, Key Accounts and Member Engagement Representative, Central Virginia Electric Corp.
All right,
Mr. Wood is coming.
Right, and Galen is online, so if you want to hear from him, he can talk.
Oh, okay.
If he's still awake.
We want to hear from Galen.
Yes.
Yep, I'm here. Hello, board.
Hello.
Okay, and I have a couple of partners in crime,
yes,
that I'd like to introduce, and they may have something to say at some point. First of all, Christine Jacobs from the Thomas Jefferson Planning District, and we appreciate your support with the contract earlier tonight. We have to get 13 of those signed so we can sign the state one so we can start that project. We'll talk about one a little bit. And then from Dominion, we have
Ryerson Leonoris.
I knew I was going to forget the name because I, yes.
And what was that name again?
It's Bryson.
Okay, Bryson.
Bryson Mealy Norris.
Okay.
So, who is going to speak? Dominion has a few slides with their middle mile program that we're partnering with them on in the new body project, and we'll talk in just a minute as we go through the slides. We're going to try to go through them pretty quickly, because you've already had a lot of information tonight.
Yeah.
But we want to give you a quick update on the CVEC build that we're completing this year, and then a quick look at that body project and status of where we are on a couple of things, and then we'll take any questions you have. All right, with the next slide. This is just a reminder of the partners that we have in the project here. Firefly, also Dominion Energy, the county, and the planning district. And it's important that all of those parties come together in order to make a project like this work. This is the big project that we're going to, all the colored areas include either the CVEC service area or areas that will be served under the body project. And you'll notice that Fluvanna is pretty well colored in. Not all counties are, but we're going to cover things pretty well here in Fluvanna by the time we finish. All right, next slide I think is actually a little closer view of Fluvanna. And you can see the blue areas are the areas that we have fiber in as part of the CVEC build and the CARES build out that we did. The yellow areas are the areas that we'll pick up with the big RISE project that we're going to talk about a little more. Next slide. So here's where we stand today. Fiber construction itself has been completed in the county. We've put up all the fiber we're going to put up. And that's good because we've gotten past all the votes. We still have to splice a few points to get everything connected together, and then we've still got some service drops to put in. I I say we have all the fiber. There's the Dominion side of Lake Monticello, we're still building in and putting fiber in place. All of the CBC area has fiber in it. We have substation areas, and I won't read them all there, but all of our substation areas are already covered now in the county. We have about 8,400 passings or locations where service is available on the electric system. In total in the county, about 5,200 of those are actually active today. That's how much splicing we've finished. We've still got that last 3,000 or so that we're going to get through over the next few months.
And I thank you for that.
There you go. And
I just got hooked up.
I was going to say, I think we have at least one new subscriber.
That must be as close because you're across the street.
That's right.
I've been waiting every day.
just hanging there. There's a little larger number left, but that's because the high density area in the lake is one of the last areas we're getting to. So even though we have a lot left, we'll be moving past it pretty quickly here in the next couple of months. We have about 3,000 active accounts in the county. We've already placed about 680 miles of fiber. We've got about another 20 or so to go as part of the CBEC, this first piece. This is not the big project. We've already spent about $22 million. We're going to wrap up about $25 million in investment just in the CBEC piece, along with the CARES and the Dominion additions, the Dominion part of the lake. All right, so that's the piece before we start the rest of the project. And one other item, I didn't put it on there, but since the question came up earlier, we are adding our 30th employee tomorrow. I think we were counting, we have about six and another person who part the time reports out of the county. The rest of them are here.
So yeah, that's right.
About 23 or so, roughly, that we have here.
Can I ask, I had heard that one delay was that you all had that some wrong cabling had been put up or something, and y'all, do you know anything about that?
No.
So. Okay.
But if you find out any more about it, let me know, and I'll look. So I'm not aware of any problems with the cabling. Okay. I'll tell you the biggest limit we have right now as far as our ability to connect faster is the underground marking issues. Whenever you dig, you need to call this utility. The rural areas have kind of been set up to handle a certain volume of that, so that contractors who do those markings for CenturyLink and Comcast and Central Virginia Electric have a certain number of personnel available. Well, now we're putting hundreds more in. We're trying to run about 150 a week. We've tried to move that number up, but we will typically get 30 to 50 locations unmarked at the start of the week, and we'll have to call in emergency marks, and then that delays other things, and we have crews that aren't as efficient because they show up and they can't dig. And so we're working with the incumbent utilities to try to overcome that. We're working with the state when we can't get agreement from the incumbent utilities, but that's our biggest limiting factor. That's what keeps us from being able to put in 200 a week instead of 150. So having said that, that wasn't on my slide either, but I went off target. Let's go to the next slide. This is the RISE project in the county, which is the areas that are unserved, that are outside of the CBC area. It's about an $8 million total project in the county. We're getting about $1 million from the state and $601,500 from the county, and we really appreciate your commitment to help continue making that financially feasible. When we build off system, it's more expensive than building on our own system. And it takes a little more in order to reach break even. And we are not in this to make a lot of money, but we also can't lose money. So we appreciate the support. The total passings you'll see will add about another just under 850. When we finish everything, we'll have about 12,000 different locations that have availability of gigabit speed fiber internet service in Fluvanna. And that's within this project. There will be places, it'll pretty much be that you either have cable options or you'll have fiber gigabit, and in some cases you have both. In the future, we may decide to extend further into those other areas, But that will be on an economic basis. This will make sure everybody gets an option and gets served. We'll end up with over 900 miles of fiber total. Again, we've got about 700 in the present system. And the total body award for the entire project we're doing in the 13 counties is close to 79 million. So there's some highlights. I think the next slide is when we're going to, I'll touch on a couple more things, and then we'll let you learn a little bit about the Dominion Middle Mile program. So here's what we're doing today. We still have service extensions in the Ferncliff area. I think we've probably got about 200 to 300 locations still awaiting service. We've got all the splicing done. We just need to put those service jobs in and get them connected. We've probably got another 50 to 100 down the kids' store area. Going to finish the Lake Monticello build, particularly on the Dominion side of the lake. We are about probably 6 weeks away from finishing up putting the main fiber in the lake, and then we'll probably add an extensions to homes all the way through the end of the year. We are also adding another small extension at the east end of River Road outside of our kids' store service area. This is through a portion of the Dominion Energy service area. But we're going to come River Road, then Winsville Drive, and then down James Madison Highway. We need to do that to connect the solar farm that we're adding it near our Cunningham substation and get a connection back to a Dominion substation that's down at the end of this line. So we've already started design. We'll start contacting the residents along there, and we'll build that this year. And that'll add, I think it's another 60 or so folks along there. Maybe a few more than that, maybe as many as 100. Then the southeast portion of the area is where we have Dominion's Middle Mile program. We've started working with Dominion, and the reason Bryson's here, and there's her name so that you can see it and not ask me to spell it, is Bryson is the coordinator for Fluvanna County for the Middle Mile program, and I'll ask her to come up and talk a little bit about Middle Mile. Next slide.
Next slide. You can go to the next one. All right, good evening. This is just a really basic scope about the middle mile that Dominion Energy provides with the infrastructure. This is also on our website, and I'm sure you've probably, a lot of people have probably already seen it. What I really wanted to speak to you about and kind of piggybacking off of what Gary stated was that we really want to make sure that for our portion of the project that communicatively we're sending out as much information as possible to the community. So can you move to the next slide, please? On here, you'll see the direct mailings that we normally send out. So once we coincide with Gary, we get the go-ahead, we'll send out a form letter. And that's just general information about the rural broadband project to the community that everyone will receive. Certainly, if there's something specific about someone's property or a supplemental easement is needed, they will be contacted with an additional communication letting them know that we want to speak with them directly. When we get closer to construction of our process, each customer will receive a postcard that's going to reference their work order number, the actual third-party information, depending on who contractor we will be out there, and I also will have my direct communication information on it. Each communication will have that on there. It has my direct phone number and email address. If anyone needs to contact me for any reason, I can reach out to the project team. And of course, when we finish, you know, the thank you postcards go out for everybody's patience. This is a very non-invasive process on our end to provide the middle mile, given any minimal circumstances where there may potentially be an upgrade to a pole because it's, you know, it's aging infrastructure or something of that nature. But generally, we're just going to come in, we're drilling a hole, and we're pulling fiber. Next slide, please. Just want to also reference the communications and collateral that if you receive it in your mailing, or if you receive it at your door, a door hanger, or a fact sheet, or even the construction boards, that's going to be by our construction crews, and that'll be by the third parties. You'll see, if they are working on our work outside, you'll see the sandwich board that's over there, too, the right, and then again, the fact sheets and information is just giving details about the project, and the door hangers have blank slides on the back to let them know, hey, we need to speak to you specifically because we're coming in your yard, or even if you're someone who, it's the same thing as like when the UPS comes in with a little sticky on your door, Even if you come and they come there and you're not there, you can say, hey, please reminder, close the gate, or please reminder, don't let my dogs out, you know, something of that nature. So I just kind of wanted to give a brief synopsis of what we had to offer communicatively so that you'll know when your constituents have it. And if there's anything that transpires that needs any assistance, you know, I'm easily and readily available to assist. Thank you.
Thank you.
And in the area where the main energy has lines, they'll be building the fiber along their main backbone and major taps. They'll own that fiber, lease it to Firefly, portions of it, and then we'll use that to deliver the retail service. So the retail service will come from Firefly. Here's kind of an overall look. I won't go through all of the steps, but a reminder that it does take a while to build infrastructure. From the time we're first in the field, we use multiple contractors, the make-ready engineering, make-ready construction here, and even the fiber construction in the Dominion area will be done by Dominion, and then we'll just do the service trucks out to the end and some of the smaller taps. But it takes about 6 months from when you first see people up until we actually able to get people connected. All right, next slide.
Can I just quickly say, by the way, you mentioned contractors. Every person that I've been involved with, whether it was over the phone or climbing a pole, has been very professional and a real pleasure to deal with.
Thank you. That's something we really emphasized at the start of the project was for the co-op, these are our members, and they're happy. We actually have one of the highest member satisfaction ratings in the nation, and we take a lot of pride in that. And we told people as we hired them into Firefly and as we hire them to work as contractors, let's leave them as happy as they are today. So, and we did a member satisfaction survey with Firefly last year and had very similar numbers. So we're doing a good job, and I appreciate you saying that because it's really important to us. And the workers take a lot of pride. They're excited about this project. It's an important one. A lot of them have family members. These are local folks. SNN is headquartered in Louisa, but they have folks and their crews from all around the counties we serve. So it's their neighbors and families as well. And we appreciate that they're taking good care of people's property and treating them with respect. All right, the next slide, I won't spend too much time on this. You can't read it very close, but it's just a reminder that wherever you are in the Firefly system, we treat you the same. Whether you're a CVEC member or outside, we're going to keep the same rates. It's $49.99 for 100 megabit service, $79.99 for gigabit service, and the phone's just under $30 if you add it on with one of the internet packages. No contracts, no data caps, no upfront costs if you sign up while we're working through the area, no slowdowns. Really simple concept, not a whole lot of flash, no introductory pricing, just simply great service. That's what we're shooting for. And then the best way to keep up with us is on the next slide, fireflyva.com. We have created a RISE page for this new project, and under it, you see that same picture you see right there, and when you click on View All Partners, there's a list of all of our utility partners, but also each county has its own site. We have the county logos, and if you click on Fluvanna, it takes you to the information about what's going on in Fluvanna with this project. So, with that, I ran through it really quick, but I'll be glad to take any questions. I appreciate you giving us a chance to come up and talk to you about it and give you a little update. In Fluvanna, we are generally seeing take rates that are 60% or better, except in the areas, we do have a couple of little overlap areas where there are other service providers who have service available, like in Lake Monticello. We tend to run about 40% when we first go into those areas and end up about 50% by the time we finish. When we're outside of those areas where there are no other choices, we tend to run about 60 to 70%. So it's certainly a needed service, and this all of the potential customers have been excited about it. We don't have a lot of turnover other than when people move.
In the lake, all the cuts that you all had to make to put it into the roads and all, is that what that's going to look like from here on, or is that, meaning it's very clear that the roads have been cut, those seams, and of course you had to do it.
Right. There's a sealant that they put down It will still, the closest comparison is probably in streets where they have the sensors laid out for street lights. Sometimes you see those.
Yeah.
So whenever the street's paved, you have covered. But other than that, with the sealant, you'll still be able to tell that that's there. But the colors will merge more over time.
Yeah.
But there'll be a little bit of a line, so you'll kind of know it's there. In Nelson County, down in Stony Creek, we did that. You can see it a little bit, some in more, a little more areas than others. Up on top of Mountain Wintergreen, they paved the next year, so I'll cover it up there. But that's kind of where we are. All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Let me thank again and ask. Anything you want to add?
No, just I think you guys all know this, but the Thomas Jefferson Planning District's role is as the fiscal sponsor to help be the liaison between the state and the ISPs and the local governments, and we'll be serving to process reimbursement requests, remittances to the state, all the record keeping, preparing for the audit of the whole program. So that's our role.
Yeah, so they're a critical player because the state funding has to come through a government agency. It doesn't go directly to the private company. And that means the oversight that's important, and the planning district stepped up for that big regional project. So we really appreciate their support too. All right.
And we are happy that they're serving as the fiscal agent for this.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Consent agenda. Minutes of June 1st, 2022. Sheriff's Office Fire Range Improvement Funding, Pleasant Grove Park Light Poles Fixtures Donation from UVA, Accounts Payable Report for May 2021, DDOT Smart Scale Round 5 applications. Anyone would like to pull any of those? If not, can we have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mrs. Eager and seconded by Mr. Fairchild that we accept the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
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 Mr. O'Brien, are you here? Okay, so.
Aye.
Okay,
aye.
Thank you. And Chair votes aye. 4-0. Do we have an unfinished business? Do we have any new business?
I just want to ask, I had a constituent ask me this yesterday, on the increasing the density to the, I'm trying to think of what even to call it, the of the R4. Yeah.
R4 zoning text.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that like a month ago or so, trying to remember what date that comes back up, and I couldn't remember what date that
was. July 6th.
July 6th.
Yeah, it's
comes up in July, but you only had one meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And our reason in, well, the board that voted at the time in deferring it was because of the comp plan, is that right?
Correct.
Hoping the comp plan would
be for the comp plan. And then also, Mr. Payne and I have spoken to some of the folks at Marina Point and the attorneys involved. And so really at this point, we're going to bring it back to you all for consideration to defer it again to get beyond the time frame that we think when the comp plan would be amended and approved. And then you all would have an opportunity. An applicant might actually look at changing it to be only a special use permit in the R4 instead of being countywide, because that's been kind of the concern.
The other thing, let me say that I told you at the last meeting that I thought you needed to act on it within a 1 year period, because that's what the statute requires. But it was pointed out to me that by one of the attorneys for the applicant, for the Marina Point, that it is our custom if it's appropriate and the board thinks the board finds it to be appropriate, it is our custom to allow additional continuances beyond that period if the applicant agrees. Since the county is the applicant, that would be a one shot, a two for one shot. You could agree to it and then just continue. So that's, I wanted to mention that so you could think about that in the meantime.
Okay. And there will be no public hearing the next time it comes in front of the board, right?
Correct.
So, and we can table this for another time, but I would like there to be some discussion at some point about, I've been confused about that for some time on a number of public hearing items, because if, for example, at Village Gardens, when they made a presentation, it got deferred, and then they say, okay, we're going to come back and we'll move our entrance to here and so on. Well, the plan has changed. So to say that the public has commented on the plan is by the very nature that it's been deferred for there to be a change could not be entirely true, but the public's already commented on that plan. So, you know, proposal number two came because it had differences. It is no longer the same proposal.
Well, that's going to be a case-by-case determination, because if the applicant chooses to change the application, but it doesn't substantially change it, it addresses, you know, some issue that may be worthwhile, but it's not of the essence of the plan, you can go forward. If you find that it requires additional public input, you can refer it back to the Planning Commission for additional public hearing.
And there's been times, too, where one of the things, even though I think technically the public hearing on one of the cases had been done, I think it was at the Planning Commission. Yeah. The Planning Commission decided, again, to hear more comments because they reopened it.
That was on Village Gardens.
Yeah.
But if it's substantial enough of a change to have brought it back and potentially get approval, it would seem a citizen could make the argument by the very nature that you didn't approve it the first time.
I'm not going to tell you which ones would be appropriate to do right. It with, because I think that's obviously a case-by-case determination of what is so substantial that it needs to be reheard. My general propensity is to say, if you think it might be so substantial, then you ought to treat it as being so substantial.
Yeah.
You ought to give public input the benefit of the doubt.
And so to the board, I'd say, if it's substantial enough to where it got deferred, they're coming back for round number two, by the nature of that, that in itself seems to be substantial.
And one thing you can't do is you can't have an increase in density without additional. So, for example, you apply for rezoning from A1 to R1, you can't then say, I don't think R1 is appropriate, we're going to make it R2, which has a higher density. You have to rehear that.
And is this Robert's Rules of Order far as whether, so that's just a county policy?
No, I think that's government law, state statute.
State statute. Yeah.
That what?
And Village Gardens kept going down in density. So,
I'm sorry, not that last part that you just said, but as far as whether you allow public comment on a, say, round number two on a deferral, where is that spelled out?
Well, the statute prescribes what you have to have for public hearings, and it was amended, I was going to say recently, but a lot of things seem recent to me, it was amended to say that if a public hearing is required, but the Board of Supervisors determines that additional public comment is appropriate, they can require additional public an opportunity for additional public comment.
So that's a state statute, is that what you're saying? Okay. You wouldn't possibly know where to find that, would you?
I'm sure you can. Probably not right this moment, but we can get it for you.
Yeah.
I don't remember the citation of the statute.
Because I've just had a number of people question it, so I'd like to be able to read the statute and say, here's what it says, and be able to respond.
I wouldn't advise you doing that.
wouldn't say yeah, what the
I'm
statute
not advisor, because then you're giving legal advice, and that's very, very, let me say, hazardous, because the applying the words of the statute to a factual situation is not necessarily black and white. And you don't want to be in a posture assuring somebody that that was the appropriate reading of the statute, and then have a court say it's not. If I do that, I can do it because that's what lawyers do.
Well, so nothing else I can give him the statute to go to.
So what do you suggest that he do if he's having a concern?
Why don't you call me and we can talk about it, and I'll have an opportunity to get to the statute.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm not real sure exactly what you're talking about. I mean, there are several statutes involved, and I'm not sure what he's having to talk about.
All right, I'll call you.
And then you can come back and share.
I will do so.
Okay, great. All right, now it's time for public comment number two. Do we have anyone who would like to come forward and speak to the board? All right, so then we will close public comments two. And we do have closed session, right? You have yes. The file to read, the yellow folder.
Mr. Weaver has it.
I'll take that as a compliment. So, Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A-1, Section 2.2-3711A-3, Section 2.2-3711A.5, and then just read these off.
Yep.
Personnel, county administrator, performance evaluation, real estate, 14 real estate acquisition, prospective industry, prospective business.
Okay. All right. We have a motion by Mrs. Fairchild, second by Mrs. Keeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone, okay. Anyone opposed? If my chair votes aye. So we are now in closed session.
So we're going to.
Mrs. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Now, do I need to that next paragraph?
Yeah.
Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that, to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, and considered in the meeting.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to come out of closed session by Ms. Fairchild, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then I do a roll call.
You need a roll call.
Ms. Eager.
No, Patricia Eager, aye.
Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
And Chair, Moselle Booker, aye. We're out of closed session. Do I have an adjournment?
I move that we adjourn. So moved.
All right. And you so moved a second?
Okay.
All right, adjournment by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eager. Any all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And we are.